It's time for Twig this week in Google, and a very special Twig. It's year end, of course, and in between Christmas and New Year, we like to give everybody the week off, the staff, our hosts. But I thought you don't get a week off. You get a special episode. How about that? And I hope you get a chance to listen to it. This is our best of some of the best moments from 2017 with Jeff, Stacy, and more. Stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 437 for Wednesday, December 27th, 2017. Our best of. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToWebinar, a trusted webinar platform with over 55,000 customers who've hosted over 2.7 million interactive web events to connect with their audiences. For more, visit gotowebinar.com/podcast. Happy holidays, everybody. It's This Week in Google, our special in-between Christmas and New Year's edition, and we sent everybody home for the week, so we're going to do a best of. Although I'm very pleased to see Jeff Jarvis of the City University of New York wearing his traditional Christmas black is here, and his hoodie is actually there's a little brown. Is it brown? Brown hoodie?
Well, it's black. It's black. Oh. It's a very neat. It's Pack Show, which is a different. It's a new kind of a designer.
Oh,
it's
like
a plastic that you can hear.
Oh yeah, interesting. It's a rainproof hoodie.
I have a sport coat made of the same stuff. It's very strange.
And Stacy Higginbotham of Stacy on IoT.
I would have worn my Santa hat.
For some reason, I feel like Stacy really loves Christmas.
I do.
I thought you might. It's especially when you have a young child, as you do. It's really fun. For Jeff and me, it's really just a bunch of bitter memories.
Yeah. It's true. It's never as good. In the first Christmas, you're conscious of it.
Yeah.
It's downhill from there. That's
right. Don't tell Stacy.
Rest of your damn life. So it is downhill.
I refuse, Jeff. Christmas is always magical. It is always fun. Even when I had no children.
Nice.
I was.
You guys have plans for New Year's Eve? It's a couple of days hence? No. Stay at home. I like to go to bed early. I
know. But we're an exciting bunch for the holidays, yeah.
Anyway, I'm glad you're here for our holiday special. This is thanks to our audience who helped us collate about 10, 12 clips from the This Week in Google show over the year. Of course, it's been a great year because we had Stacy join us. Actually, you joined us more than a year ago, but this year was your first full year, I think. Am I right, Stacy? I believe.
It was. Yeah. And I may even come back for next year.
You darn well better.
Crossing my fingers. You're invited. Actually, we started with this. This is a story we were talking about on January 11th of last year, almost exactly a year ago, and it has gotten no better. Google's messaging mess. Very sad news, I guess. And this is another one of those Google things that, they're all hot and excited about it, and then they lose interest over a couple of years. You remember that Google Hangouts had all these wild, crazy things you could do in the Google Hangouts video calls, conference calls. Everything from put a mustache on to play ping pong. Google has announced that they are going to shut down the Hangouts API, which will prevent new apps from being built and turn off all existing apps on April 25th. So, bye-bye. I read something interesting that makes a lot of sense to me because we've complained bitterly about Google's very confused messaging over messages. SMS apps. You know, Allo can't be an SMS app, but Facebook's Messenger can on Android devices. All Android phones typically come with Google's SMS app messages and an SMS map called messages from the manufacturer like Samsung or LG. So I have like four or five candidates for SMS messaging, including Hangouts. So what is Allo? What is Hangouts? What is their intent? Which of these should I use? It's very messed up. And what I read, and I think it was probably on a Reddit thread talking about this Hangouts API, is it's probably for antitrust reasons. Google's reluctant. That which makes sense, right? That if they were to say, no, this is the messaging app, everybody uses Android should use this messaging app, that would be an antitrust problem. Don't know. But that it has to be some external force. Surely Google knows what a hash they've done of this.
Yeah, well, you would hope
Apple
so.
Has their own messaging thing. They control their physical hardware to a greater extent than Google.
That's a very good point. Apple does have one messaging app. It does SMS and data messaging. It's not cross-platform. You have to use... It's cross-platform to the extent that it interoperates with the SMS network.
Right.
But you can't get Apple messages on Android. So you're right. So maybe... never mind. Because Apple's not being sued.
But Apple isn't like the king of search and all kinds of crazy productivity apps either. So yeah. I don't know.
Right.
Antitrust is going to be hard to determine as
what's going to happen
converged.
Going forward. We don't know.
Yeah.
We are in such... It's really... I've been talking about this a lot with friends and family off the air. It's just unknown what's going to happen in 10 days. What the world's going to look like.
Terra incognita.
I said this morning in the chat room, I said, I really wonder what a year from now, what our top news stories will be. You know, what we'll be talking about on January 10th or January 11th, 2018. Could just be like this. Probably there'll be some Google technology that they're deprecating.
I'm like, there's deadly silence as we're all like, we can't even imagine.
We can't.
And some of us don't want to imagine.
Well,
I don't want to go there.
I'm willing for it to be good. I don't know. I'm just waiting to see what happens, I guess. The most common passwords of 2016 from Darren.
Oh, that's on here?
Yeah. Darren Guccione, who is at Keeper, which is one of the well-known password, very good password vault, Keeper Security. They went through 10 million passwords that became public through data breaches in 2016 and came up with a list. Are you ready? The 25 most common passwords of 2016, they haven't really changed much. Number one, 123456. Number two, 123456789. it's three better. Number three, QWERTY. Number four, 123456789. Number five, 111111. I had a chief engineer who used that as a password, as I remember. In fact, I think at Tech TV that was the default password, was 111111. Number six,
really, what you
123456789 0. Number seven, 123456789. Number eight, password.
I feel like that's sinking.
It's going down. People are learning.
It used to be like number one.
It was number one. No, I think 123456 has always been number one. Number nine, 123123. Oh, clever. And number 10, obfuscated by doing it backwards, 987654321. Why is my noob a password? Number 12 on the list.
Snarky hackers.
Number 21, Google. What's your Google password? Google? Wow. Anyway.
Oh, I was trying to figure out the 1Q2W3, and then I'm like, oh
look
I
at your
it.
Keyboard, right?
Yeah. I'm like, so what's 18 ATCSK? What's that?
Oh, that's it. Number 15 is 8. This is a good, this would be a great test, right? For people to, like, okay, you have 5 seconds to figure out why number 15. What is 18ATCSKD2W?
ATC.
18. It doesn't seem like it's related to the keyboard layout, does it?
No, I was typing it in. I'm like, I don't see it.
What is...
But if this is... I mean, apparently this is multiple people.
A lot of people doing it. What does it mean? Come on, chat room. It's stuck right between 666666 and 777777. So it's got to be pretty obvious. What could it be?
S-K-T-C-S-K-D.
This is the only one. You're right, Stacey. This is the only one that's not immediately. I feel like once we know, it's going to be. Oh! Got three smart people here.
R-J-S. No, some of these are weird. Like, look at 20. That's.
I'm sure they all have some meaning somewhere. Number 20 is 3-RJS-1-LA-7-QE. Is it backwards? Is it anything?
I would be a terrible hacker. I'm looking at here for like, I feel like I'm reading license plates. You know, where you're trying to figure out what are they trying to say.
These are obviously used at on sites where it requires a letter and a number, right? Is shift helpful?
ASCII? No?
No.
Okay, so. Oh!
Wait a minute, here's Leo. A link to the in the I chat heard, room.
It's a hard coded password for bots.
Oh, this is.
Spam bots, yes. This is a bot used by spam bots.
It's spam bots use it. So it's not.
What Gizmodo is saying, yeah.
This is Graham Cluley, not aptly named. Writing at tripwire.com. The reason is bots.
Ah.
Huh. People are not choosing those passwords. Same with 3RJS1LA7QE.
Ooh, I spotted the bot passwords. Woo!
You are an anti-bot.
I'm a human.
You're a human. Wow, that's really interesting. It must be hard-coded in some malware or something, right?
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, there we go. We've all learned something here today.
Mystery solved. Thanks, Internet.
So do you want to talk about Vault 7?
Yeah, I want to hear what you have to say about this.
Ian Thompson did the work, so we didn't have to. He actually went through all 8,000 documents. 8,761 CIA documents published yesterday on WikiLeaks. While it's, you know, it's hard to tell the provenance of these, it seems highly unlikely that WikiLeaks could have generated this much content speciously, so it's probably real or something like it. They were good enough not to include the exploits, the actual code, just the descriptions thereof. Most of this, like the Snowden revelations, is several years old. Some of it was misreported initially. For instance, you might have seen that the CIA can break Signal, WhatsApp, and Telegram encrypted messaging. Not so. As Ian points out, what it actually says is that the CIA, if they can compromise the device, the computer, the phone that's using Signal or WhatsApp or Telegram, they can get it before it's encrypted. That does not say that they can decrypt it in transit. That's fairly important. So one of the things, of course, is that your Samsung TV, in one particular model, could be used to listen to you. They've got the code to hack it and turn on a full-time speaker and microphone, which is funny because there was a big brouhaha. Samsung, in its terms of service last year, you know, let slip in there, oh, and third parties could possibly be monitoring you. Scaring everybody. And we said, oh, that's just boilerplate. That's not possible. Well, so Edward Snowden tweeted yesterday, still working through the publication, but what WikiLeaks has here is genuinely a big deal. Looks authentic. I guess Edward would probably be a pretty good expert on that. With regards to particular operating systems, CIA has a modest collection of attack tools for systems powered by Microsoft's Windows, keystroke loggers, sandbox, escape ropes, antivirus avoidance mechanisms. CIA analysts found flaws in control panel, the ability to add data streams to NTFS without detection, so you could put data onto storage drives, DLL files, a popular attack vector. There's a program called Ricky Bobby, which is Will Ferrell's character in the movie Talladega Nights. It uses Windows PowerShell and several .NET DLLs to put a listening post on a target PC. You know, all of this you kind of expect they have. The one big takeaway was how much more humor in the code names the CIA's stuff had than the NSA stuff, like names like Swamp Monkey, Eggs Mayhem, Ricky Bobby,
Weeping Angels.
Yeah, Weeping Angel. We liked that one. That's, of course, a Doctor Who reference. I didn't know that, but I was informed. Lots of pages of hacking tools for OS X, including, at the time, what was the most recent version of OS X, El Capitan. Of course, this is an old dump, so presumably they've updated those. There's a project called Harpy Eagle that analyzes the Apple's Airport Extreme firmware for private keys and then cracks it. Also, time capsule systems. There's a project called Quark Matter that puts persistent spyware on an OS X system using an EFI driver stored on the system, EFI system partition. In other words, something that wouldn't be wiped by formatting the drive. Snowy Owl uses OpenSSH to pull off remote monitoring. I mean, it goes on and on and on. This is a very rich set of stuff. Now, Android, whew, lots of exploits.
Uh-oh.
Kronos, Creatine, Starmie, Snubble, Bowtie, Sucker Punch, and Roid Rage. SMS stealing, Chrome-based attacks for Android. There's a huge number of exploits. Escalation of privileges, allowing malicious apps. Baron Samdi, which is a voodoo name. Doug Trio and Salazar allow for remote access. They're fixed or mitigated by later versions of Android. But remember, a lot of people have older versions of Android. And, of course, this list is 3 years old. The CIA stash contains, this is all from Ian Thompson on the register.co.uk. The CIA stash contains rundowns on most of the popular antivirus systems and how to defeat them. Much of the information has been redacted, but there are a few snippets left. So that's interesting that they're working to defeat antivirus software.
Because it's a path in, right?
Yeah.
Virus, yeah.
Yeah.
What about Chrome?
What the? Sorry, go on.
Smart TV. I haven't got to Chrome yet. TVs. We mentioned Weeping Angel, which takes a Samsung TV and turns it into a fake off mode, which makes it look like it's powered down, but it's still on and can be used as a bugging device. That's really handy, actually. But the TV has to be compromised by a USB stick inserted into the device.
Yeah, that one wasn't as stressful.
Yeah.
Although, you know, if they're going to come into your hotel room or whatever to put a bug in there, I've been watching The Americans. They could stick the USB in the TV.
Uh-huh, exactly. How easy is that? You don't have to drill holes or anything. Apparently, they're looking actively at the Internet of Things. Now, 3 years ago, IoT was not such a big story, but it is now, right?
I feel like it's almost exactly in the same place, to be totally honest.
Yeah.
3 years of IoT excitement, and basically the most advanced devices I have are my Nest and my Echo.
Yeah.
So.
You're living Brigadoon.
One analyst included his favorite ASCII characters for conversing online with Japanese people, along with games he likes to play and some music suggestions. I guess they had a kind of a jaunty way about them, the CIA operatives. Nougat is already being eclipsed. The next version of Android is coming into beta, Android O.
Takes all the suspense out of it.
Wait, well, do we know what it's called?
OMG, we do not.
Oh.
Oreo jokes have been made.
Oreo would make sense.
Throw us off.
I don't know. Better battery life. What's new in O? Here's what's new in O. Background limits. Building on the work we began in Nougat, Android O puts a big priority on improving battery life. That is actually the biggest thing that I would say Android needs to work on compared to iOS. Because iOS is very good about, very aggressive about killing background tasks, and as a result gets very, very good battery life on much less battery. The way you, if you're an Android device, you handle this is just by putting in big old batteries. So there are automatic limits in O on what apps can do in the background in three main areas: implicit broadcast, background services, and location updates. This will make it easier, says Google, to create apps that have minimal impact on a user's battery. Notification channels. These are new app-defined categories for notification content. Channels let developers give users fine-grained control over different kinds of notifications. So in the past, all you've been able to do is say, I don't want a notification from you. Now you'll be able to say, I want this kind, but not that kind. That's good, right? New visuals and grouping to notifications that make it easier for users to see what's going on. Autofill APIs. So I use LastPass for autofill, which is awesome. But this will make a standard operating system-wide autofill API available to apps. So they won't have to kind of do, you know, LastPass, you know, have to turn on stuff and things. They have to kind of do a accessibility workaround and stuff. So this is welcome news. That means that your password manager will be better at autofilling in passwords. Picture in picture. So, you know, we already have that with YouTube, right? When you're watching a YouTube video, it can go down into a little thumbnail as you do other applications. There's a new app overlay window for apps to use instead of a system alert window and a multi-display support. Actually, I think this is going to be interesting.
Different from the split screen?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good for it's handsets. Okay.
Multi-display support is interesting because, and you're seeing this already, Windows Phone has it. It's called, what is it called? Begins with a C, I can't remember. But the idea is that your phone is going to be your computer. And if you can plug it into a display and keyboard, suddenly it's a full-size computer. And these phones are so powerful now. I think this is going to be a big category in the years to come. So you don't have more than one computer. You have one device that can be a desktop, a laptop.
Consider the earlier conversation. You go abroad and you rent a screen and a keyboard,
right,
and this is your computer.
Right. I'm guessing, but that sounds like multi-display support for launching an activity on a remote display. That sounds, this is more like Chromecast. I don't know. Font resources in XML. Mm-hmm. Adaptive icons to help you integrate better with the device UI. Mm-hmm. This is for developers. Wide gamut color for apps. This is good. New Bluetooth audio codecs like LDAC. I'm not familiar with LDAC. New Wi-Fi features like Wi-Fi Aware, previously known as Neighbor Awareness Networking or NAN. With the appropriate hardware, apps and nearby devices can discover and communicate over Wi-Fi without an internet access point. Ooh, interesting. Some sort of ad hoc.
Oh, ad hoc networking?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. For the longest time, I used to run Serval, so we could do ad hoc networking, but no one else ran it, so
it sounds like it'll be built into Android O.
That is so nerdy awesome.
Nerdy awesome.
I think that, think about that for like protests, but also think about what you could do from a community standpoint or just even at conferences. Oh, so fun. Okay.
Nice.
Sorry.
Like it. Keyboard navigation, arrow and tab navigation, audio API for pro audio. This is something that's really been a problem in the past on Android. Actually, I'm glad to see they're addressing this. And it wasn't really Android's fault. It was because of the kernel they were using. But latency on Android was too high for really professional music apps. So there is a new audio API that will have a high-performance, low-latency audio streams. That's very interesting for musicians. You know, that's why there's not a lot of great music apps on Android. Web view enhancements, Java 8 partner platform. This is some big changes, but not so much UI changes as kind of API changes. I think, isn't that kind of... I feel like that's what Google said, is that they're going to do a TikTok thing where they update the interface and then they update under the hood and they update the interface in the next one. Maybe I'm mistaken that with somebody else, but that would make sense.
I really should talk to all these IoT companies about how they've planned to implement and update their Android on the back end for all of their devices that are running versions of Android. Because a lot of them don't spend a lot of time on that, I don't think.
Well, do they do iOS? Is that why? Is it like that's the platform of choice?
No, they build their stuff on Android.
Oh, on Android. Oh, I was going to ask
June Oven. your Juno.
That's right. June is Android. Android. That's right.
There's other things. I think the Nucleus conference system thing is built on Android. So
interesting.
It's out there. It's open.
Yeah. It's free.
It's free.
Free.
Yeah. So YouTube TV. YouTube TV was announced about a month ago. Nobody knew when it was going to launch or where. And it has launched today in 5 American cities. I think that everybody in the nation, in the U.S., can sign up, but you only get local programming from the area of one of those cities. So
New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Bay Area, Chicago, and Philadelphia. AMC exactly. is going to be on the network. It's kind of right now, it's kind of the sports and locals network with a little news thrown in. It's got all the news networks as well.
Yes, but I believe that this is really, really, really bad news for the cable TV industry and a really, really big deal, much bigger than people realize. And I'm going to tell you exactly why. Now, just a quick roundup of what it is. It's 40 channels for the basic
35 bucks
package. $35, and that's 5 accounts, each of which has unlimited DVR. You can watch 3 of them simultaneously. You can watch it on a phone, on a tablet, on a TV with Chromecast, etc. It has ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, the CW, ESPN, USA, Bravo, etc., Disney Channel, on and on.
It does not have CNN. HGTV.
No,
it does not have.
But it has
CNN.
Oprah.
What else you need? It does not have HBO, AMC, MTV, etc.
It has, yeah. At least you get Desperate Housewives. Come on,
so, there you go. And some cooking shows. But it also HGTV has, is super hot.
It also has a DVR functionality,
unlimited storage for the DVR.
And this each is how easy
of the accounts can have its own DVR. So each of your kids can have their own unlimited DVR.
So let's say I am an Archer fan, which I am, and I want to record Archer. I could just click it to. Boom, I press the plus button. It will now record every Archer episode, and I will have that available to me to watch time shifted. Oh, this is for you, Stacey. Total Divas. You what like that? Divas? Let's add, I don't know, but I think you're going to want to watch it. Add Total Divas to my DVR. The NCAA Championships, Modern. So this, and it's got live locals, right?
Does it have live locals for sports? Like
Yes.
On MLB Live, you know, your baseball games are blocked out if you're.
I don't know. That's a good question. Because that is a little bit of a problem.
That's annoying.
Sometimes they promise that they've got, you know, Major League Baseball, but then you get blacked out.
Well, they're probably going to be some of that, but probably less than on other services. It's the sports coverage is really pretty good. ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNNU, the Big Ten networks, SEC network. There's much better college coverage and
Fox
coverage
Sports
of,
1 and 2 and NBC Sports. Here in the Bay Area, we've got the Bay Area network, so we can watch Giants baseball, Warriors basketball, CBS Sports Network. It's even got golf. It's got the kids stuff, Sprouts, Disney. It's
Phineas
got
and Ferb.
Phineas and Ferb, baby.
So
that's such a funny
thing
show.
The thing that I think that that movies and TV shows are becoming more and more available on multiple places. You name it, Hulu, etc. But what's becoming more rare and valuable is event television, including sports. So the Oscars, the Olympics,
that's the missing piece from any cord cutter.
That's the missing piece.
Netflix, you can get HBO.
This provides that.
Yeah,
this provides.
And by the way,
almost all of it.
You can compare this to PlayStation View, AT&T's DirecTV. There's 3 or 4 of these services now, but. This is Google. The UI is spectacular. So here I am. This is my cable guide. These are the live channels I can see. And you said Phineas and Ferb, so I hover over it, and now I'm watching it. It's actually playing as a preview. I get a great. It says 17 minutes left. I get a great description of it. I can see if I want to watch it. I see what's next. I can DVR it from here. I can go full screen. This is how. You know, when Steve Jobs said, I've licked TV, it's, you know, this is what I would have imagined Apple would have done. And Apple
this is what he would have licked.
Apple has not been able to put this together.
You know, the thing that's powerful about this is that people under the age of 30 are obsessed with YouTube. But as they get older and start families and go to college and all that kind of stuff, they're going to want to watch more mainstream TV, but they love YouTube already. And so they're going to start watching their live TV and their cable TV on YouTube. This is very devastating to the cable providers. I think one of the things it's going to do is finally turn phones into a legitimate and widespread medium for live TV.
Because this will work on my mobile device. Might even sell some iPads, right?
It might. It'll work on all these mobile devices. The other thing that's really devastating to cable, and I think it's really underappreciated and underreported by all those fake news people, is the fact that their advertising abilities are through the roof. The advertising industry has been champing at the bit for years to get for Google and YouTube to launch exactly this, because their data on the users is amazing. And they'll be able to very tightly target advertising, and YouTube would be able to charge a fortune for advertising because it'd be so so tightly and accurately targeted at the demographics of the viewers.
They don't. The premium channel's a little bit lacking. They have Showtime. They do not have HBO. You'd have to buy HBO now. I mean, at $35, this is the least expensive offering. This beats PlayStation's lowest offering at $39.
Yeah.
What?
So for NFL fans, you'll fall under blackouts on mobiles because Verizon has this.
Right.
I'm still trying to figure out the blackout situation.
Good luck, because it's terrible. So look at this, though. Here's Sports On Now, and I'm actually getting live mini feeds of the Giants game, the Athletics game, the NCAA championships. Here's ESPN, soccer. And Total Divas is apparently a sports show. I don't know if that's the case, but it's in there, right? And these are all.
I'm not sure I'd like that show.
Yeah, these are all live.
I think that's what they call soccer.
Yeah, Total Divas. Oh, that's right. It's the drop and flop. This is the UI that you nailed it. By the way,
God, Total Divas is a sports show. I had to look it up. Sorry.
Okay.
It is a docuseries following the top female WWE superstars.
Oh, but it's wrestling. So it's kind of got a little bit of both.
Yeah. It's like reality TV on reality TV.
Yeah.
This would not interest me.
The title of this episode, season 6, episode 7, a win-wine situation. So you be the judge. Now, I have to say, for the YouTube generation, YouTube's mixed right in, including the YouTube originals, right? Shows on YouTube. YouTube videos. This I could see my son, my 22-year-old son, who does not watch TV, he watches YouTube. This is what he wants.
And the beauty of it is that family plan, the kids are going to be nagging the parents to get the family plan. The $35 a month covers five people, so each of the kids gets their own separate account with their own DVR. This is big news. This is going to be really popular, I think.
Now, what is the here's the big issue I see is this is a lean forward experience on mobile and even on computer. What is the lean back experience? Do I watch it on Chromecast, Android TV? I guess Android TV, right?
Yes, and Chromecast. And Google said that they're going to be making announcements this year of additional TVs.
So I have a Shield at home. This will probably be now on my Shield because I have YouTube on there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But I do think I do think that the subtle play here is a behavioral one, and I do think it's going to turn live TV and event TV into a lean back experience.
Getting the live locals is a big deal. Now, I'm in the San Francisco area of dominant influence, but we are 50 miles north of San Francisco. We can't over the air get any San Francisco stations. So, here in Petaluma, but I am getting the locals. I'm in the San Francisco Bay Area, so that's really interesting.
That's awesome.
This could replace cable for me. This is fantastic.
The Bay Area coverage seems to be much broader than the other metro coverage.
Yeah, they call it Bay Area. Yeah. Wow, this is just in the nick of time for baseball season to start.
Yeah.
You don't have MLB Live?
Not anymore.
It's expensive.
Not anymore. Right. It's $149 for the season. This is $35 a month. I guess it's the same. But I get a lot of other stuff. It sounds cheaper, though, doesn't it?
Given how long baseball season is.
does sound cheaper, though.
They should have a weekly rate. That would be really cheap.
Wow. I have to say, for iOS today, we did a review. I did a review of all of the streaming packages, PlayStation View, which I think was until now the best, AT&T DirecTV, which did not work very well. And a lot of people continue to complain that it's not working very well, that it's not playing, that there are bugs. Slingbox, Sling TV. What are some of the other? I think that's the big three right there: Sling TV, View, and AT&T. This one beats them up, down, and sideways. It's in every respect. Plus, it's cheaper.
Yeah. Here's another a subtle benefit. You can pause it. So if you're going to be out of the country for a month or two, you can not pay during those months. And if you don't, if nobody on your family account logs in for 3 months, they automatically pause it.
What? Stop charging. That's nice.
That is very anti-cable company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, this is where competition really, we really benefit from that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so here's some movies. Let's say I did want to see The Matrix. They know their geek audience. I click on it. It's going to be on Sci-Fi. I just press the plus button, and now it's DVR'd. That's it. It's simple as that. Wow is right. Now, I'd be interested if I'll be able to skip commercials. Then they also
that was
have,
not known.
Yeah,
that,
related on YouTube, and here's all the YouTube content. So this is a great cross-promotion for YouTube. And then there's more information about the cast. This is exactly what the online consuming TV audience is now kind of expecting, right?
Now, Leo,
Unless it has a lot of advertising.
But it doesn't
imagine if they bought Twitter and integrated Twitter into that experience. How great that would be.
Oh, that's what's missing from this is a kind of real-time interactivity and outrage. How dare they put Lauren Lake's paternity court on at 4:30?
Oh, time doesn't matter.
Not anymore.
I still remember my daughter saying to me, probably like when she was like 6 or 7, she's like, I feel, because we've been cord cutters forever. I feel really sorry for my friends who have to watch television shows when they're on. I was like, what are you talking about? Also, wow.
So you get the first month's free. So I'm on the free trial. By the way, most of these other services, in fact, all the other services have 1 week free trial. So in every respect, YouTube has clearly paid attention to what's going on out there. Apple really wanted to launch this, by the way. But even if Apple does launch exactly the same service, it'll be limited to Apple TV.
They don't have YouTube.
And they don't
have YouTube. I could do this instead of Hulu. Sorry, my brain just clicked on, although it's kind of more expensive compared, because I use Hulu as my network TV, but I get so irritated because they window things that if you
but
don't
I don't
catch
know.
It,
see, it's not in Austin yet, so...
Oh.
New York, LA, San Francisco, Chicago, and Philadelphia.
You don't get that or Google Fiber.
They're going to have AMC, which is that's the Walking Dead crowd.
But again, Stacey, I'm pretty sure you can just get the Chicago one.
Really? Is that the case?
I'm pretty sure.
You don't have to be in that area. Why don't you try that right now, Stacey? TV.youtube.com.
TV.youtube.com. And
Hulu is working on its own. These are called skinny bundles. Terrible name.
Try 1 month free. Oh, my God. But I've got to pick one of my 8 Google accounts. I guess my personal one.
It's 1 month free. Just remember to cancel it in a month. That's what I did is I set reminders to cancel all of those other services because I did not want to have
Hold on. Now I've picked my account. It's asking me about my location.
Okay.
They guessed my location wrong, but it is not available in my area.
Yeah.
So they're not letting you do it. So what if you tell them that you're metros. In Chicago?
Give me a zip code for Chicago.
What is the Spiegel catalog, right? 60601?
6060. I'm not even
Spiegel
I'm
catalog,
even
Chicago, Illinois, 60601.
Chicago area. YouTube TV is available in my area, but unfortunately, you're going to have to wait until you're home to sign up.
but
what if you use VPN?
Yes, I could.
VPN, but that's not, that's not going to be satisfactory. The question really is, how soon do they roll this out nationwide? Yeah. And will they? And I suspect that they have to make these negotiations with the locals for in each market, right? Or no? You can't go to CBS and say, hey, can we run KPIX, our local CBS station. Let's see what the quality is. It's starting off not great. And remember, we have the Auto 360. I can go up to 480p. I don't see HD. That might be another issue. So Judge Judy doesn't look as good as she oughta.
Is that Judge Judy?
No, I don't know who it is. You're asking the wrong guy.
Judge Judy's she's older and has shorter hair. Who is that?
That's the People's Court. This is the Wapner replacement. Time for Wapner. Judge Judy's coming up.
Three dogs and a cat. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's Judge Judy. I was like, that's Judge Judy.
I got fooled.
What are you thinking?
Closed captioning?
How many pets? when you're already in under, you know, you're over your head in just
audio track primary. I guess I can do. Let's see if that sounds in Spanish.
Okay. So then
subtitles.
He called me. He said he was unhappy. He wanted to come back.
Oh, watch. And, you know, this is the way to watch it. I can watch it at double speed.
Oh, my God. That would be awesome for all those reality TV shows. We replay everything a million times.
Go out, come back. I wish they would make the voices twice as high.
And then his behavior just became erratic. Yeah. He was eyes closed. He would sit up, start talking, you know, like rambling. At one point, he took a pack of frozen meat.
That's
why are you acting like this?
Why are you acting like this? Me. Why are you doing this to me? That's really interesting. YouTube TV. Wow. I think this might be a killer. And I have to say, I've seen Google do some stupid things, but this is a killer product. I still like YouTube TV. Here we are, what, 7-8 months later, and I didn't cancel my subscription. I subscribed just to try it. But I really still think it's actually a great deal for TV. I haven't, on the other hand, canceled my cable either.
Never cancel anything.
You just pay more.
Pile up more monthly fees more content, and more devices.
More content. What was your...
get Leo to subscribe to.
I'm such a sucker. I'm just curious, your favorite... Jeff used to be a TV critic. So I'll start with you. Your favorite TV show of the year. Was there one that you just really enjoyed?
Well, I just finished binge watching. I'm going to be a cliche, but Stranger Things was a lot of fun.
It really was. And season two was... arguably even better than season one.
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
I think really. Several times during the show, I actually exclaimed out loud, Lisa can vouch for this, this is the best show I've ever seen.
I wouldn't go that far.
It was good, though. It was good.
But it's good. It's good. It was really enjoyable.
How about you, Stacey? Was there a show or a movie or something you watched that you really thought was great this year?
I have four.
Four is good.
So, post-Trump in office, I was kind of feeling bummed,
yep.
So I rewatched Parks and Rec.
What a great show. And you know what? Worth a rewatch. That show wears well, I think.
I never got into it.
Oh.
I'll tell you this, Lemony Snicket. That was a great show. But now you have a kid that's the perfect age for Lemony Snicket.
Yeah.
Yes, and there's such a shortage of good quality TV for, like, real family watching. Mm-hmm, so. Mm-hmm. That was amazing, and I can't wait for the next ones.
They're going to do more? Neil Patrick Harris is perfect in it. He's so good in it. And it's even better because they made a movie of this a couple of years ago that was awful.
It was. It was terrible.
It was terrible. But they got Lemony Snicket involved in the production of this one, and it's much truer to the books and really wonderful and creepy at the same time. And the
creepy,
only
creepy, but not.
Yeah, but not too creepy. And the only show I've ever seen that begs you not to watch it every time in the beginning. Go away. What else? That's two.
The Good Place.
You know, I started watching that because of you, and I enjoy it. I do enjoy it. It's very good. But I love her.
I do, too.
And Ted Danson's good. Yeah.
I'd say Stranger Things because it was also awesome.
Wasn't it awesome?
Yeah.
I have one. It's a late entry. But I've been binging it, and I love it, is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel on Amazon Prime.
It's good.
You know why I like it? I'm in it. Not really.
You're in it?
Well, not really. But it takes place in 1958 in the Upper West Side of New York, which is where I was born in 1956. There's a two-year-old boy who looks just like me in it. I think it's me. And it could be my mom. So except for the circumstances are a little bit different, but it's a wonderful period piece in a very interesting time in New York's history. It's one of a whole crop of new, strong women leads. She's going to be a superstar, I think, out of it. I can't remember her name, but she's very good. And I think you'll just enjoy it. And the music's great in it. One thing I like about Amazon, I feel like Amazon, they don't have rights problems with the music. So sometimes you'll see a show. There was a show on HBO about rock and roll where they couldn't play. They didn't want to play the real songs. They didn't want to pay for it. So they had kind of fakey sounding. I can't remember which one of the many shows on HBO. Maybe it was Vinyl. But they had fakey songs. And it really annoyed me. They've got all the real songs. Lots of Streisand and Sinatra and stuff in it. And it sets the tone. It's beautifully, beautifully done.
Oh, and that another period piece with a strong female lead, The Crown.
Love The Crown, the most expensive television show ever made.
So I'm just thinking that she's dull.
Well, did she you, is told. That's you, kind of the point.
She's the queen. You can't. You don't want an exciting queen.
How can you cavil over a show about adult?
Have
person?
You seen the second season yet?
I haven't seen any of it. Victoria
was very good.
Myself liking. Yes.
First season was a little duller than the second season. I'm finding there more dynamics in the second season of The Crown. I'm really enjoying it.
So as a woman who is expected to behave a certain way, when I saw that, I saw her like internalizing mm-hmm. and then working her mm-hmm. way around things mm-hmm. that I've always had to, I don't necessarily obey it, but be aware of it.
Yeah.
So
it does. It probably does speak to a lot of women. Yeah. And it's also, by the way, the same period. It starts in 1956, the second season.
I just started watching Dark.
Yeah. Now, tip on Dark, and I know you're doing this. If you just watch it on Netflix in default, it's got the worst English dubbing I have ever seen in my life.
Yeah, I hit the German subtitles.
It's horrific, but I didn't. Yeah, you can go right in the Netflix settings and turn on English subtitles, German
but
dialogue.
It really is the dark, stranger thing.
It's so
really
strange.
Sprockets, yeah. Strange. Yeah, it's
Sprockets, strange. I don't know about it. Yeah, now is the time when we kill. no, I like it, and it's much better in the German. The original German is perfect. It suits it.
It works for the.
It suits it so well.
Yeah,
I felt like with the dub version, I was watching Woody Allen. What's up, Tiger Lily? It was just like it was almost comedic, right? It was terrible. All right, let's move on. That's actually a good way to end the year. Is talk about our favorite broadcasting of the year, but we also talk a lot on this show about Google, of course, and Facebook. You were at Facebook's Developers Conference F8. And we talked a little bit about it back in April. Let's first get a report from F8. We covered the keynote yesterday, and a lot of attention paid to a couple of things. Mark Zuckerberg and company announced a new platform in the Facebook app for augmented reality using the camera. A platform in the sense that developers will have a way to access the camera and information and add filters and things to it. Some people said it was, you know, really a catch-up to Snapchat's filters and world filters, which Snapchat announced the day before. They also announced the VR Spaces, which is a beta version of an Oculus Rift program that allows you to finally be in the same space as somebody else wearing Oculus Rift and interact with them. So what do you think, Jeff?
So I think Farhad Manjoo in the Times this morning had the best piece that I've read and probably the best thing I think he's ever written about Facebook today. And he starts off, and they're probably not going to like it very much, but he starts off saying, yeah, okay, so Mark's a thief. So they took this stuff from Snapchat. They took other stuff from other places. They bought other companies. But then by the end, he says, and so what? Steve Jobs stole, Bill Gates stole. This is where it is. The power of Facebook is the network. And I think he was really right. Chris Cox showed a good slide yesterday in the keynotes where he showed one axis was how they go from one-on-one relationships to your community, up through your geography, to government, to media, to government, right? And on the other axis was all the tools they have, from text to photos, all the way to AR, VR. And what really struck me is they missed a third axis. And the third axis is what Facebook really is, which is that it connects people to people. And that's what Farhad is really talking about. That's the power of Facebook. That allows them to do anything they want. So yeah, they took features from Snapchat. Tough. It's a competitive world. And maybe they weren't the most innovative in the world. Maybe they're following, but they have the network that is phenomenal. And so, yes, they have the power to bring rainbow puke to the world.
Right. Well, you know, what reminds me of Matthew is Microsoft in its heyday in the 90s. Yeah. They embraced
and extend.
Yes. And extend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
That's exactly what I thought of, too. And, you know, to be fair, I think they did copy stories, right? They copied it holeless, bolus. Yeah. They've copied lots of other things, but what they are talking about with augmented reality, they didn't just develop that stuff a week ago because they saw that Snapchat was working on it. These are things that Facebook and just about everyone, I think, has been thinking about for quite some time. So it does look as though, you know, they're duplicating things that Snapchat is doing. I think they both seem to be moving along the same track, which is to use the camera as the easiest sort of interface to a virtual world. That just makes sense. They've also, their vision, I think, goes significantly farther than Snapchat's has, or at least has so far. So are they duplicating each other? Yes. But I don't think it's just Facebook is out of ideas, and so they're copying whatever Snapchat does.
Farhad Manju quotes Miranda Kerr, Evan Spiegel's fiance, in an interview with the Times of London. She said she couldn't stand Facebook's behavior. Can they not innovate? Do they have to steal all of my partner's ideas? She asked. When you directly copy someone, that's not innovation. To which I say, writes Farhad, meh. There are lots of different kinds of innovation in the tech industry. Coming up with something first is not the only kind. One of the reasons Microsoft got dinged for this, or is it dunged for this? Dunged is because it looked like they were being a bully, right? They used their market share to invest, you know, to approach companies, say, we'd like to see more of that, and then steal it. Or they'd buy companies that were competitive and engulf them. To some degree, Facebook's done this. But I don't think Facebook's being a bully here. And I think you're right, Jeff, that they had to have been working on this all along. It wasn't like, oh, we like this worldviews. Can we do that tomorrow?
Right.
But the innovation they showed today in the keynote, where they talked about direct connections to your brain and AR glasses in our lifetime that are comfortable and really work. And another things that show that they are truly innovating in gigantic ways. And Snapchat, bless their soul, came up with a mechanism that young people like to communicate with each other. They did a brilliant job of it. But in a competitive world, you see the best ideas and you use them. How innovative is Facebook? We'll see over the next 20 years. It's only just had its bar mitzvah.
For the first time ever, an advertisement has intentionally triggered a voice assistant. Intentionally. We do it by accident all the time. Now, if you've got a Google Home, go ahead, Jeff, put your Google Home up next to the speaker. What's funny is this Burger King ad doesn't do what it was trying to do. So maybe they didn't expect it to work. They just thought it'd make everybody laugh.
You're watching a 15-second Burger King ad, which is unfortunately not enough time to explain all the fresh ingredients in the Whopper sandwich. But I got an idea. What is the Whopper burger?
According to Wikipedia, the Whopper is a hamburger consisting of a flame-grilled quarter-pound beef patty, sesame seed bun, mayonnaise, lettuce, tomato, pickles, ketchup, and sliced onion.
Oh, it did work.
It did work.
Now, I thought Google had... Okay, so here's what I... Here, this story, like, evolving, and I feel, like, so played by, conglomerates here. But they said yes. Wikipedia was edited to change the top section of it, for a while, and they were like, did Burger King do it? Did someone else do it? Okay, so was that Prankster or Burger King? The other thing then was that I had seen that Google had stopped that from working, but clearly, Jeff, yours just didn't.
Yeah. So it looks like Burger King is behind the Wikipedia edit because the line was added by somebody with a username Fermachado123. Burger King's marketing chief is Fernando Machado, and he uses Fermachado123 on Instagram and a very similar name on Twitter. So
I still feel like I'm being played.
You are being played, but not by Google, by Burger King.
This is like, okay, so this is why voice authentication needs to come sooner rather than later.
And also, by the way, The Verge modified the Wikipedia entry, and the Google Home said the new entry. So, you know, if I were Burger King, I'd be very nervous at this point. We should check.
Well, read the other story. No, it got far worse. The one right there on the rundown.
Oh, okay. So this
is toenail clippings. The Whopper is made of toenail clippings.
Oh my
cyanide!
God.
Yes, so, because the Wikipedia was adapted and the voice comes from Wikipedia.
Now, they've fixed it, and I would guess Wikipedia has locked it down, although oddly they've locked it with the promotional copy.
Well, of course they did.
Well, but Wikipedia doesn't take ads. That's very interesting.
It's not inaccurate. I mean, the Whopper and
it's not made of nail clippings. That's inaccurate.
And cyanide.
Yes. Like if it said it's a delicious burger with lightly toasted sesame seeds.
That's true. It is just mere fact. Yeah.
By the way,
Burger King got what it really wanted, which is all this social media play.
You're welcome, Burger King. Here we are.
I'm craving a Whopper right now.
Better than Chipotle, Burger King. You can buy an ad on this very show. We'll play your ad.
Well, I'll eat Whoppers if you want during the show.
not if it's the wrong 36
hours. Not on my fast days. Yeah, no, right. but isn't that interesting? And I wonder if we'll see more of that,
Right. That'd be a better commercial, Leo. You're on your fast day, and they start. Karsten runs the Whopper under your nose to torture
Shaking.
You.
Shaking. Isn't that funny? Isn't that funny?
It so irritates. Like, can, it but irritates it feels you. Like.
Yeah.
We're gonna be like people were saying. Apparently, when I did my little birthday thing, they were like, "Oh, you triggered my echo," you know, and I'm like, "Oops." It's a dick move to trigger someone's voice activated speaker.
Intentionally, it is absolutely
intentionally.
It's easy enough to do accidentally.
Yes.
In fact, it goes back to Aaron Paul. There was an Xbox ad where the actor from Breaking Bad issued some Xbox commands, and quite famously, because many people, not many, but probably many, relatively, I did, had their Xbox hooked up to their television set. And so when he issued the command in the Xbox ad, it took over the TV. And you no longer were watching the ad. That was an unintended consequence.
Like bad advertising.
I think this is quite clever. I wonder what Google will do to keep it from happening again. I guess there's nothing they can do. You're right. No. The one solution, Stacey, is voice authentication training.
Or you could do, like, didn't we have a whole, I feel like, am I hallucinating this conversation? But we had a whole thing about frequencies that you could play underneath.
Yeah,
the...
no, we talked about it. And I annoyed everybody by playing a 5 kilohertz tone.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah.
The show, and everybody was getting very
upset. Oh, yeah, you really pissed off everybody below a certain age.
This Week in Google brought to you on our special year-ender by a great company, a company with a product I've used many, many times, GoToWebinar. We've used it to host... I gave a GoToWebinar on how to keep your kids, your teenagers safe, for instance. We've used it to promote Twit. We've used it to promote other products. It's really a great tool. They have 2.7 million interactive web events every year, 60 million viewers every year. It's designed to have you or as many as 6 presenters talk to almost an unlimited number of viewers. And by the way, you can not only talk to them, they can see you face to face, but they can also see your desktop or your application. You can show them a PowerPoint presentation. GoToWebinar is awesome. Starts with you creating the webinar. Makes it very simple to make custom email invitations and confirmations and reminders. They have automated email templates that makes it even easier. Of course, your company logo and images on it. It's great for marketing. You can create and schedule pre-recorded webinars. Do them and then have people watch them anytime on demand, and they'll be just as interactive, just as much fun. And that's great. It means you give one seminar, but it continues to broadcast your message for a long time. Mobile friendly, too, of course, both for you as a presenter. You could schedule a webinar, edit a session, track performance on your iOS or Android device. People can view you on their iOS or Android device. I really like the poll feature, which makes it interactive, right? You know, if you're giving a webinar, you want to know, are people paying attention? Do they understand? You can do on-the-fly Q&A. You can also prepare polls in advance. Very valuable for marketing. It makes a webinar very much more interactive. It's not just them passively consuming it. It's better than TV for that reason. It's really interactive, but it looks as good as TV. GoToWebinar also will let you know how your webinar is doing with amazing reporting and analytics. Just a click away, you'll get qualified leads. You can get metrics, the information you need to make your webinars more compelling, more interesting too. Of course, it's secure 128-bit AES encryption end-to-end. Number one in customer satisfaction. I want you to try it right now. Turn your next presentation into a conversation with GoToWebinar. For more information, visit the website GoToWebinar.com/podcast. GoToWebinar.com/podcast. And we thank them for their support of our year-end This Week in Google.
Hey, let's talk about...
Let's talk about why I just got a Google Pixel and it won't let me choose Hangouts as my default messaging app.
Why can't you use Hangouts?
I don't know, because it's a Google Fi phone, and Google Fi text messages come in as Hangouts, but they apparently don't want me to use it to send out as a message. I have to use Android Messenger or Facebook.
But there was a bug with that.
I don't think it's a bug. I think this is the new thing.
Are you a Google Voice user?
Yes.
Oh, I've got a Google,
and this is a Google Fi. This is a Fi phone. Go ahead, go in your Pixel,
and I've used Hangouts on it just fine.
I know, but no. I'm just saying, go into apps, choose your default apps, and it's, you know, where it says SMS app. What are your choices? Well, in my case, Facebook Messenger, Messages, which is Android Messages, and Signal, because those are the three messaging apps I have installed, not Hangouts.
But what does making it the default do for you anyway?
It means that if you send an SMS, it goes through Android Messages. And
but why wouldn't you send your SMS from Hangouts?
I can, but it's not the default.
Yes, you can. Just use Hangouts. If you send from,
on my dock, the Hangouts is the messaging app on my dock.
So when you send from Hangouts, you're sending from Hangouts. So the problem is when you receive, but if you've clicked on Google Voice, redirect anything from Google Voice to Hangouts, then it'll come into Hangouts.
It's a fee fi phone. Hum.
It doesn't matter that it's a fee phone. That's just a SIM card. Right?
Well, I'm using Google Voice.
No, I'm telling you, that's how we'll fix it. That's how I fix it.
Switch from Hangouts to a new text messaging app.
But you don't need to switch. You're happy with what you're doing.
I know, Google.
Just use the. I don't have the little thing in front of me to show you, but just go into Hangouts and make sure you've ticked.
I know what you're talking about. No, I know what you're talking. And I am, and I still am. And text messages now come to both Android Messenger and Hangouts.
Well, I haven't had this problem.
Well, go ahead and try it. Maybe you haven't updated the latest version of Android 7.1.2.
Connect Hangouts and Google Voice, right? Receive.
No. Look in your phone. Look on your Pixel phone. You can no longer make Hangouts your default SMS app.
I guess I never used it as my default. I never set it in the first place. So.
Oh, all right. So you get your SMS messages in two places.
Well, I don't think so.
I don't know. It's confusing.
I'll have to go look.
Google's dropping SMS support from Hangouts.
I can't go look right now. I'm on the phone.
But
That wasn't the same thing, but that was for Google Voice people. And that's not for Google Voice
people. No, five people were exempted. I understand. I'm not a Google Voice person because I lost my stand. I am and I'm not. If I go to watch, you know this. If you go to voice.google.com, watch. Go ahead, watch.
You have to log out of Google Voice.
It brings you to Project Fly.
It's a freak nightmare. If you have Google Voice on one account and you have Google Fi, or Fi as I like to call it.
Why?
On another account, you can never be logged in. You got to totally log out of that Google Fi account.
But I don't want to log out. I'm using Google Fi.
But what do you care on Google Fi on the web?
Because this is how I see my billing and my thing.
Well, just open it up in an incognito tab. Or why are you going to Google Voice anyway on the web? You only need to do it once.
Okay.
I have Google Hangouts on my desktop.
Have you ever heard of Stockholm Syndrome?
No. Oh, do not get me going on Google and the nightmare that it is with Google Voice. And just even when they rolled out the new app, it was a piece of crap because it looks cleaner. But do you want to send animated GIFs with Gboard? No, you don't get to do that with Google. So I'm like back on Google Hangouts. And I would abandon Google Voice and Google Handouts and all the mess that they've got out there. No one knows what they're doing. And like you say, you try to go to Google Fi. It's like, oh, I'm sorry, you're going to Google Voice, but you were Google Fi on another account. You could never, ever go. And you're like, oh, my God, what is wrong with you? Oh,
and I guess why, I didn't get them started.
At this point, can't I have a Google Fi account with a Google account that is like a Google Docs work, whatever, Gboard, whatever they're calling the new stuff. Oh, G Suite. Got a G Suite account? No Google Fi for you. Why? I don't know. We're Google. We can't handle the fact that people who pay us money to have services can't actually get to use all the services we'll give everybody else for free. So, yeah, I got some issues with Google and their big messed up thing. But I've worked around them as best as I can because, you know, when I was in Japan, I turned on my Google Fi phone. I had internet and it worked. And I had Google Voice so I could still get phone calls from the U.S. and I could send out messages. And that was very convenient. So I live with it. I endure it just for those occasional overseas trips. But it could be better.
Wow, Danny, that felt really cathartic. I enjoyed that a lot.
Let it out. Let it all out.
I mean, I kind of want like a t-shirt of you doing this.
Oh, it is embarrassing though, because Google Voice is such a great service, has potential to be such a great service, and they've just shoved it off into nowhere land. I know. You're just like, what is wrong? And my only guess is because they just don't think they can make any money off of it.
So back we go with some of the big stories of 2017. And I think there's no bigger story, and I'm sure you'd agree with me, than Susan J. Fowler's memo about mistreatment at Uber that really brought down the CEO of Uber, Travis Kalanick, and among other events, I would say, created this new Me Too environment to the point where Time Magazine's Person of the Year were people who were speaking out. We talked at the time, and this goes back to July. Susan Fowler's memo was in spring, but this is in July, about harassment in Silicon Valley. And I think, Stacey, you had some really good points. So we spent a lot of time on Sunday on Twit, on This Week in Tech. We had I kind of rejiggered the panel because I want to make sure we had at least one woman. We called and got Katie Benner, who wrote the New York Times article about harassment in Silicon Valley. Really blew the lid off of it. It all started, and credit to Reed Albergati over at The Information, who broke the story of Justin Kaldbeck. And Kaldbeck, of course, a venture capitalist who was accused by at least six women of using his position of power to sexually harass women who were women entrepreneurs who were trying to get funding. I mean, that is as bad as you can get. And then Katie Benner, in her article for the New York Times, furthered the story by talking about Chris Sacca, another very well-known venture capitalist, Dave McClure of another very famous, and Mark Cantor, a very famous entrepreneur, all three of whom apparently did something similar. In fact, Dave McClure, in Medium, shortly after the New York Times article, wrote a mea culpa, a confessional piece, in which he said, "I'm a jerk. You got me," and it stepped down from his position. Chris Sacca has. I'm a creep. I'm sorry. Was the name of that story? Chris Sacca has continued to kind of deny the allegations, as has Mark Cantor. But nevertheless, these are well-known people in Silicon Valley. Not so much Justin, but these two, very
Mark
well-known.
Mark Cantor's was much worse. You know, he said that. Well, I acted like a jerk to get rid of her.
Yeah, he really
denied
it.
That was
awful.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's clear that at least some of these allegations are founded in fact. I mean. Both Kaldbeck and McClure have left their positions, and in fact, the Kaldbeck's fund has been dissolved.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
McClure apparently had decided to quit earlier, but as it turns out, now there's still a lot. By the way, there's still a lot of conversation about all this in Silicon Valley and elsewhere. He apparently they knew about this, and they didn't maybe act on it as quickly as they should. Christine Tsai, who is his partner and now runs the fund. 500 startups, says, I didn't know, but he'd said he was going to step down earlier this year anyway. And now, anyway, there's a lot more to this story. And we don't need to go into the deets of these specific story, as I'm much more interested. And I know, Stacey, you wanted to talk about this in the culture. I have to say, though, the conversation is really important. And I have to say that as we've started talking about this, I've heard from everybody I know, oh, yeah, I've been harassed. And not just in the tech business, but every woman has been harassed at least once, if not many times.
But how much worse is the tech business?
That's a good question.
That's.
I don't think it is.
Okay. Well, whoa. Okay. I would say I've worked in finance. So I worked when I was very young. My first job was bond traders and working at the bond buyer.
That's a bunch of bros.
It's a bunch of bros. It's a very
big swinging, yeah. You know what's.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, there's harassment there. Then I worked actually here in Austin where I dealt with a lot of the real estate guys. And they were at the time, I guess you could get porn on your smartphones. And I vividly remember sitting at a table, like at a gala with some real estate guys, and they were like showing me the porn on their smartphone. And I'm a 23-year-old kid.
Yeah, isn't that sweet?
I'm like, ew.
My wife worked in the construction industry, similar.
Oh, yeah.
Similar. Yeah. Very few women and a very macho culture.
And then, yeah, tech guys are also bad. So I think let us say, oh, hey, I think the issue here is that the tech industry is not as enlightened as they maybe thought they were.
Yes. And not as diverse as it needs to be.
Well, yep. We've known that forever. I mean, I was kind of getting to that from an economic diversity when I was asking about internships in journalism being paid, for example. That's a different kind of diversity. We're not talking about that here. But, I mean, these are conversations everyone should be having across the board, both economic, racial, gender. All of that needs to be, if we want to fix where we are, right? So those are the big macro kind of questions. But
boys will be boys.
Wrong.
If there aren't enough women around to say, knock the heck out and stop it.
So that's not, I mean, and most women aren't going to do it because boys still have the power and right. You don't want to be seen
right.
as.
That's right. So until women are equals in power, I would submit that's going to be a problem.
You should not say the word boys will be boys. You as a person, Leo, should say, hey, there's not enough women in power. I'm going to say, hey, stop it. Don't do that. And I've worked for some real jerks, and I've worked for people who are amazing. And I'll call out Ohm for being really amazing because.
Right. He set a great culture.
He did. And, you know, I remember someone writing on the bottom of a blog post. It was a picture from one of our structure events, and it was a picture of me sitting talking to some person at a cloud computing event. And the person wrote, great legs. And I saw this and I was like, oh my God, that's so embarrassing. And Ohm just without even thinking about it, just deleted it and was like, sent a note to the person, was like, screw you. We don't want your kind here on our site. And
good for Ohm. I love that. I don't say boys will be boys to in any way condone it or even say it's okay, but just that this is what happens when you get a bunch of men together. You go in a locker room.
It doesn't have to happen.
It does. I agree. It shouldn't happen, but it does. And somebody in the chat room saying, "I worked in construction. There's not a single construction office in the country that doesn't have a adult calendar on the wall." Now, if there were women executives, that would stop immediately.
It might not. Some women internalize a lot of this.
I guess. I'm looking at Google's diversity report, which just came out. This is overall 69% men, 31% women in general. If I go to tech, which is what we really care about, it goes down to 20% women. The thing I see also very shameful, 1% black, 3% Hispanic.
Wow.
53% white. The next largest ethnicity is Asian, 39%. So this is Google who's apparently trying very hard to create diversity. But if you are in an environment like this, I think that's very hard on the 1 in 5 women.
But Leo, yes, I think that's true. The what should frighten us more is that when one person has the courage to come out and expose this, the number who then follow.
Yeah, look what's happened.
BC or whether it's Bill Cosby or any of these cases. So, you know, it's not a numbers game. I think Stacey's quite right. It's a power game no matter what. And even if the numbers are 50-50, there's intimidation that goes beyond even that.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, aggressions of all kinds. And I agree with you, Stacey. We should all be more like Ohm. And even if there aren't women in the workplace, there should be men in the workplace who say, knock it off.
Exactly.
And I would say, so here's my advice to guys in the workplace. It's just basic rules that I can't believe they don't know. But
their mothers didn't teach them.
Their mothers didn't, or their fathers. I mean,
Sorry.
I'm like, we are not putting this all on the women. Sorry, Jeff.
But the real problem is that men.
Oh, wait, Leo.
Go ahead.
Please give you my rule. Okay. Rule is, I should never know if you want to sleep with me in a work environment. That's and you are dealing rule. With a woman.
That's a good rule. I like that.
Any woman you're working with should never know if you want to sleep with her or not, because it's completely irrelevant to your professional relationship.
Yes.
Period. And if you follow that rule, you're great.
That doesn't mean just not saying I want to sleep with you.
No, it means all of the flirty, weird things that people do.
Yeah. Ugh. But I think that's a very good rule. And the thing I would say is that most men want to sleep with most women. So the difficulty and the reason men kind of gloss this over is, well, we're all thinking this. anyway. So it really is, it's got to be at a behavioral level. You can't, I don't think you can teach men not to think that.
Right. I don't care what they think. I just should never know.
I love that rule. I mean,
I work with so many men and I work really closely with lots of men. And I honestly, I don't give it much thought, but when I was thinking about this rule, I was like, God, did any of them want to sleep with me? And I have no idea.
Good.
Zero.
That's good. I like that a lot.
So.
And you can tell I don't want to sleep with you, right?
I don't even think about it.
No, it shouldn't come up. It shouldn't even be. No, that's such a great rule. I've never heard it articulated like that. And I think that's, if it comes down to it, that's it. But but you really got to say, that doesn't just mean you say something. It means showing you porn at a dinner. It means having a sexy calendar even in your office.
Treating you with respect.
Yeah, treating women with respect. Yeah. You all probably, if you follow tech news, know that last week a Googler, at the time unnamed Googler, posted on an internal board a memo about why he felt Google. Now, I'm going to try to phrase this in a neutral way. Why he felt that Google was barking down the wrong path with its diversity initiatives and was perhaps too politically correct about it to do a good job. He wasn't anti-diversity. He said right up front, I'm not against diversity. I'm not against an attempt to make the workplace more diverse. But we have to understand the difference between men and women. And I think a lot of people read it and took it as women are not suited for tech jobs. That, of course, got an immediate response, loud, vociferous response. Gizmodo somehow got the actual memo and published it. Yonatan Zunger, former senior engineer.
Recently former.
Yeah, we didn't even know he wasn't there until he wrote this piece and said,
brilliant guy.
I could talk now because I'm not there anymore, so I can talk in a way I wouldn't. Completely dismissed, A, the factual material in the memo, and B, said the guy should be fired because this is destructive to Google. The VP Diversity at Google put out initially a memo saying, you know, this is unacceptable. And Sundar Pichai, apparently the CEO of Google, came back from a family holiday to address the issue, and they ended up firing the person who wrote the memo. It's a 10-page screed, at which point Julian Assange immediately offered him a job at WikiLeaks, saying he was a victim of the politically correct culture of the United States. Have I summarized that? I think that's pretty much where we stand today. There have been articles since both in his favor and against him. I'm not going
to
use
his name.
I think
to describe this as neutral is like you cannot describe what he did as neutral in a neutral fashion, because what he did was basically take a position which, fine, let's talk about Google's diversity efforts, but the way he decided to do the conversation was by saying, it was the equivalent of me walking into a place and saying, hey, let's talk about crime statistics, and then saying something terrible about Black people and accusing all of them of being a problem or not up to white people crime standards or something equally horrifying. So to even describe this in neutral terms, I think gives it way more credit than it should even get. This is a terrible piece of writing in terms of just spewing hate in points that are directly from men's rights activists. But two, doing it in such a way that if any reasonable person had decided to take issue with the company's policy by doing it like this, they should be fired. This is not a reasonable thing to do, because anyone reading that memo is going to be like, holy cow, I work with a guy who's a total kind of misogynistic jerk. I would say bigger, worse words, but I won't. I get that people are like, oh, let's argue the science. I'm like, screw the science. He is wrong. He doesn't address all of the issues behind the science. And B, the way he did this was like dropping a bomb in his workplace. His colleagues are going to have to clean that up.
I'm not sure. What I don't know, maybe you do, but I don't know I don't. He posted it. We're told on a meme board, an internal board, and then an internal equivalent of Google Plus. I don't know if it was not. I don't know if this was sent to every single person at the company or it was posted in a discussion group for this. Yeah, everybody could see it. I gather, but okay. I don't know even. And
if he sent it to 10 people, if he sent it to 10 people, then and one of them is a woman, then there's a hostile workplace. So, and if they're all men, then they're kind of conspirators. It doesn't matter how many in Google.
Okay.
And think about when Facebook posted their wall where they had their wall where employees could write stuff. And then suddenly when Zuck had to come down and say, hey, guys, you cannot. I think, was it White Lives Also Matter? Or someone took a stance and wrote on the wall.
Oh, I forgot that.
He is a CEO. He had a responsibility to come in and say, guys, that is not our culture. That is not okay.
Right. That's kind of what Google did. And, of course, we should stipulate immediately that Google, as a private company, has the right to fire the person or the right to discipline the person, has the right to react any way it chooses. There's no free speech in the workplace in that sense.
Right.
So he's not, you know, what he wrote was not protected because he published it on a company board. So, I don't think anybody would dispute that much of what he said was hurtful and inaccurate about women, saying things like women have a higher tendency to anxiety. So if you're going to have them in a tech job, you should have them in a place where it's, you know, it's less anxious. Women are extroverted. Men are introverted. That's you know, blatant, obviously not generally is it true. Neuroticism, higher anxiety, lower stress tolerance. This may contribute to the higher levels of anxiety. I don't want to get Stacey upset. So
He seen a Woody Allen movie? I know. That man's entire room.
Well, okay. So a couple of things. First of all, and he even says this, these are generalities. But you're generalizing about a gender, just like generalizing about a race is offensive to people.
But Stacey's onto something else here, which is really important, you know, which is and I could barely get through the damn thing because it was so badly written.
Yeah, I couldn't read the whole thing either. I tried.
So that's part of the case going on here. Yeah. Whether it's political or technology, the Venn diagram we're getting here of the so-called men's rights movement, which is, as a man, I will say, is BS. We've had plenty of rights for plenty of time, and it's a reaction to feminism. It's a reaction to a perceived loss of power. It's a reaction to all kinds of things, like nationalism, like racism. You know, misogyny fits in there, and so there's a set of dog whistles. There's a set of ways to talk, and you know, when I criticized it, then boom, I got it on Twitter like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's disturbing to me. Is I mean so that exists and that has a voice now because social enables it. It enables lots of things, good and bad. I'm okay with that.
I think there's also I think we could clearly say there's a tenor in this country right now to tolerate speech that we would not have tolerated 10 years ago.
Well, that itself is an argument, right? Because if you go to NRO, National Review, and others, they're decrying his firing as a lack of free speech and as political correctness. But the point I'm trying to make here for the show that's relevant. So don't send me your emails. I'm being relevant.
Oh, send them emails anyway. you think that's going to stop them?
What disturbs me is the connection of the technology industry, because it's not gender diverse, and the so-called men's rights movement and the misogyny that is inherent in that, and how they come together, and the whole Gamergator world around technology and men, and technology not being open to, respectful of women. That's a huge cultural problem, not just for the individual companies. But I don't think you can take this one guy, as The Atlantic did, and said, well, this shows the horrible core of Google the horrible core of technology.
I want to propose something. I was going to go – because, first of all, if you just go to the end of his memo and look at his suggestions, I think we can clearly throw out the bogus sociological crap he's throwing in there, although people with some – expertise in the area are defending him.
No. There are people with expertise defending him. There are also people with expertise saying he's full of crap.
So
that's why we're throwing that out.
There's some debate about it, but we're just going to throw that out.
I'm not even going to call
it. Would you agree with, he says, my larger point is we have an intolerance for ideas and evidence that don't fit a certain ideology. Would you agree with that?
No, because he's using my ideas and freedom of expression to espouse stereotypes, bigoted thinking.
Well, yeah. But then says, I'm not saying we should restrict people to certain gender roles. I'm advocating for quite the opposite. I couldn't disagree with this line. Treat people as individuals, not as just another member of their group. Tribalism.
That's fine. But he, in this memo, lumped women under an entire group who's bad at engineering. So I love the fact that he's like, oh, yeah, let's all be individuals.
But let's not do that. Women are
extroverted, neurotic.
So here's what I'm going to propose. So maybe we'll diffuse this a little bit. Technology and frankly, business in general, but technology particularly has been a male playing field for so long that we have a certain picture of it. And people who have grown up in the industry have a picture of how it looks, how the workplace looks, how the product that we create looks. On Windows Weekly, I said it's like we for years have been operating with a black screen and white text. You know, just, it's been in black and white, and then all of a sudden, people are saying no, but we want to make it a rainbow. We want to include everybody. We want technology to reflect all the people in the world, not just this white, you know, short sleeve pocket protector, skinny black tie, nerd glasses.
Speaking of stereotyping, group. But keep going.
Well, but it, you know, that's the IBM thing, you know, and I think what we're saying is it should be in rainbows, and it's upsetting to people who say, but no, but tech is this way. And I think that this is what this guy really at
so
bottom
is
saying.
Wrong. On this, I'm just going to.
But I feel like what he's saying is, he doesn't know it, but what he's saying is, this is how it looks, this is how it should look, this is how it's always looked, this is how it feels good and right to me.
This is how I don't want to change.
And what we're saying to him is, I understand why you'd feel that way, but it could be so much more, and there's so much more opportunity with diversity, not just gender diversity, but racial diversity, national origin, that the melting pot is a melting pot of many colors. It could be so much more interesting. Yes, it doesn't look like what it used to look like. That's upsetting to people. But the opportunity is so much better that it's worth opening up your mind to that idea.
Let's just jump over to Amazon. We keep talking about it. This way we don't have to dance around it anymore. I feel like this was a very surprise announcement on Amazon's part. I had no idea that there was an event. Maybe I was just out of the loop. But then suddenly, boom, boom, boom. It was like 5 million products were being announced. And we've got them all here. Well, we don't have them in studio, but we've got them to talk about. Amazon showed off first a new smaller Echo device. It's wrapped in cloth. It's not quite half the size, but it's probably like, I don't know, it probably cuts off a third of the size of the original Echo. But it's wrapped in cloth, so maybe it fits into your home a little bit better. $99, you could get a 3-pack. If you like buying in packs, for $250, you just add 3 to the cart, and then you get a $50 discount applied there. And apparently this, well, with a 3-pack, obviously, it offers the Echo's new multi-room functionality, so you can get these between rooms like we were just talking about. Matt will not do that. Many others will. And then you can also make free calls in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, as well as 911 calls. I'm assuming that's because you can plug the phone into this, which that's what you can do with another device they announced, which we'll talk about in a second. But smaller Echo, $99, so lowering the entry point for kind of what used to be premium Echo functionality. What you think, Stacey? I know that you are an Echo user. What do you think about this?
Man, I'm super excited. Now, so I looked at this and I was kind of bummed that I do not have like the wood grained, the faux wood grained Echo. I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. In my house, I've got two dots and two normal sized Echoes. And so I'm running out of rooms. I could buy one more and put it in. I've got one more room I could use it in. So I probably would buy it, but I may actually go for, there's two other products that I'm really excited about. So
okay.
The plus, let's talk about the plus.
All right. Well, the plus is, it's kind of hard to call. I mean, well, okay. So the plus is the more premium of the devices that they showed off today. Although it's still cheaper than the current Echo, or the, like the original Echo. It's $149, which is $30 cheaper than the original Echo. But the Echo Plus retains the bigger form factor of the original. They've kind of redesigned a little bit of the material and everything to make it look a little sleeker and everything, a little bit more refined. It has a built-in smart home hub for smart home control. It also includes higher-end sound and components for those who play their music through an Echo and not on their phone. It ships with... Sorry, Matt. I can't help it.
It's all good.
Ships with...
I'm proud.
Yes. Wear it like a badge of honor. It ships with a Hue light bulb in the box, which I think is there to kind of prove that this is meant to control, to be a hub for your smart home. Stacey, do you know what is the standard that's built into here? Because, I mean, I have Hue at home, and it requires a Hue light bulb hub.
The Hue uses Zigbee, but it uses I think, Zigbee HA. So Zigbee is kind of a pain because there were many variations on this standard software profile, so things could get kind of wacky between things. But the fact that there is no hub, they're basically saying that, hey, the Hue guys are like, yeah, this thing talks Zigbee, and we're going to just talk to it, and you don't need a hub. As someone who has, I kid you not, 10 different hubs, I can see if I bought one of these, I could get rid of like 6 of them, which totally worthwhile because my little server closet is the hub home. And I would love this. And, you know, everybody who listens to my show would be excited too, because I give away my hubs when I'm done with them. So they'd be like, yeah, I get a Wink hub. I get a SmartThings. You get a Philips Hue.
So basically this hub is going to replace multiple other hubs that you have serving different purposes. Yeah.
Okay. That would be my hope. I would lose the software functionality. So like, and this is something to think about. Like if I had this and I had the Philips Hue bulb, would I use the Philips Hue app or would I just run it through the Amazon Echo?
Right.
And that's a real question for people who are partnering too, because Philips Hue wants my email address. It wants all this data and information for itself. But if it's going through the Amazon Echo, how does it feel about that? I don't know.
Yet they packed thing. In a Hue bulb in the package, so they're okay.
Well, yeah.
With
so
it.
That are they? I mean, well, did Amazon actually? Because you know, Amazon doesn't always ask about this stuff. It's like, hey, we had some Hue bulbs in inventory. Let's toss these in.
That's true. Sweeten the deal.
I assume that's not what happened, but you know, I would not put it past Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. What do you think, Matt? You have Google Home, I'm assuming, throughout your home, but what do you think?
I do have a Google Home. I also have the Amazon equivalent. I am breaking new pioneering waves in dumb home technology. So, you know, just the amount of work to try to control a lot of this stuff. I'm like, you know what? I'll just get up and turn off the light switch myself, you know? So I'm like adding a skill to this and then you got to reboot. So I'm playing around with going super, super dumb and just, you know, trying to use those cycles for other things these days. So we'll see whether that works out. I'll report back on the experiment. But I got to say, like, there's so many devices that Amazon announced today. It's like they've just decided to make Echo its own like consumer brand, you know, like the Echo buttons sound pretty cool, but it doesn't sound like they have anything to do with sound.
So. No, so the Echo buttons, this is kind of a strange one. If you were ever hoping to turn your Echo into a game show, we've all been there. Now you can. These buttons are for interacting with Echo devices for family. Well, not just family games, but for games. Trivia was one example that they used. So basically, you get a 2-pack for $20, and that'll release timed with the holidays. But it's kind of like that. What was it? Staples had their big like
easy button
or whatever. It's kind of like that, but it works with the Echo devices. So that you can kind of ring in, it has a little an LED light that lights it up. I don't know. So that one came out of nowhere, but I mean, I can understand. Like that would probably actually be very fun. It's the first in Amazon's Alexa gadgets lineup, so there will be more in this gadgets category.
I think this is awesome, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah, tell us why.
So I love gameplay. My daughter and I, actually, we do the Jeopardy skill. We also do Would You Rather, because she's a tween girl, and that's like the best game for tween girls. So I can see us having a total fun. It's like totally a stocking stuffer kind of idea, right? It's $20 for a two-pack?
For two, or is it 40? Yeah. No, $20
for two. Yeah, so $20 for two. That's nothing. The other thing is, if you're a clever developer, you could start building this into skills. So, you know, Amazon's got their IoT button, but that's $20 and you have to be pretty adept to code like a skill for your IoT button. But like, I spent forever doing a skill for Did I Feed the Dog? So in our house, you know, who knows who feeds the dog? You know, we just, it's just a common question. So we actually put a motion sensor on the dog food container. So when we lifted it, you know, it would send a text to everybody. But I wanted to do an Echo skill for the longest time to be like, this skill, did we feed the dog? And she would tell you yes or no. With this button, I could stick it right next to the dog food. Whoever opens and feeds the dog, they just hit the button. And then when we ask that question to the Echo, not each other, we'll get an answer. So I feel like there's a lot of really cool opportunities for being able to press a button to indicate to your personal assistant that lives in your house that something's happened, right?
Absolutely. And then, I mean, technically, you know, even this button has an LED in it. Maybe it changes to a different color when you do that. And that way, if you don't ask, but you just happen to be standing there, you see that it's blue, you go, oh, okay, already done. I know.
See, even smarter. Look at you.
Well, you know, I am a developer. No, I'm not. Not at all.
Are the dishes not dirty or are they clean?
Yes, yeah. Right. Boop.
Okay.
So then, but that turns this, like Amazon really build this as being for games. But I mean, really, maybe the game part is just an example of some of the unique ways that you can use this and let developers run wild with it and see what they come up with. I like that. Let's see here. What else do we have? We have the Echo Spot, which is an alarm clock with Amazon's voice assistant baked in, as all of these things have. A 2.5-inch circular screen device. It has the ability, well, you know, so it's got a full screen there. You can view cameras, hold video calls, of course, watch video news. I'm sure you can watch videos on there if you really wanted to, although the circular screen might make that weird. But it has the ability to control your smart home, Bluetooth capability, 3.5-millimeter stereo cable if you want to take your audio out into your home, you know, into your bedroom, let's say, have speakers and a setup there so that you wake up to nice, pleasing music, maybe Katy Perry or someone.
Woo-hoo!
I don't know. $129, ships in December, pre-order now. Was this the other device that you were really excited about, Stacey?
So I was excited about this, and then I learned about the camera feature. And then I was like, oh, if I could do a video call on this, that means there's a camera, and that means right. I don't want to put it next to my bed.
Right.
I mean, I do actually trust Amazon quite a bit, but I don't trust anybody that much, unless there's like a hard shutter for it.
Right.
But it's so cute.
Yeah. I mean, it is cool. I mean, yeah, maybe you get that and you throw the little of the tape over the camera, and then, you know, if you really need to use it.
But then you eliminate the cool, cute design.
That's,
I mean,
true.
It's,
you so cheapify someone, it.
Someone called it Chumby for, it's Amazon's Chumby, and it is. It's
yeah.
It's exactly that. So I'm like, welcome back, Chumby.
We missed you.
It's like you were never gone.
No, the button is my favorite thing. The little LED game buttons.
Okay.
Awesome.
And not to mention inexpensive, so you can get a ton of those. And everything that I've read about the Spot is that it's considered like a discounted Amazon Show. So if you had reservations about Amazon Show with the camera and everything, I mean, coupled with the alarm clock, that means it's almost destined to end up in your bedroom. So, you know, ask yourself whether you're okay with the fact that there's an internet-connected camera hanging out in your bedroom. And if you're okay with that, then great, go for it. If not, you know, maybe think twice.
So Google last week announced, a week ago exactly, a number of new devices, including a new Google Home, two new Google Homes, the Google Home Mini and the Google Home Maxi, or Max. It's just Max. They gave everybody at the event, I did not go to the event, now I'm glad, they gave everybody at the event a Home Mini, including from Android Police, Artem Rusakovsky, Rusakovsky. Artem set his Ring Mini up and then noticed it seemed to be responding a lot to kind of random noises. So he went online, you know, Home, Google Home has an online interface. You can see all the triggers. So he went to his Google My Activity portal, opened it up, and he says, my jaw dropped. I saw thousands of items, each with a play button and a timestamp, all attributed to this device called the Mushroom. So he was a little nervous. He thought maybe Mushroom is the Mini because he knew that the code name for the Google Home was Pineapple. So he listened to the audio clips, and it was like sounds coming from his living room. Oh, I'm sorry, not his living room. Worse, he put it in his bathroom. So he sent a note to Google thinking, well, hi, please forward this to Google Home team for response. I'm working on a story I'm going to publish in the next day or so. I discovered this issue. Would you please confirm the Mini's code name is Mushroom? And here's, you know, my activity page. He says, here's the kicker. Based on Google My Activity, the onslaught of thousands of transmitted and saved assistant-related audio queries started the day the Home Mini was set up. Needless to say, if a listening device records almost every minute of every day and stores it remotely, we're talking about a huge privacy violation. Does Google have a comment about this? Now, this is at, what does he say, 4:22 p.m. He heard from them 10 minutes later. and by 7 p.m., Google was on its way to his house to take the Mini. An engineer drove up to Oakland to examine it that very night. The next day, they say, we've learned of an issue impacting a small number of Google Home Minis, like all the ones we handed out at the press event.
Ooh.
Ow. That causes the touch mechanism to behave incorrectly. See, apparently, there, if you just like your Google Home, if you touch the top of it, instead of saying, okay, Google, you touch the top of it, it'll trigger it. Apparently, they had something wrong with the switch, and it was registering phantom touch events. So the fix, which they pushed out pretty quickly, simply disabled that capability. And it says, he says, the company let me know they're in the process of building a long-term fix. But if you're one of those journalists, no, but actually, you wouldn't have to do anything because they pushed the fix to all of them. But how embarrassing is that?
Wow.
I don't think that was malicious or intentional. They certainly responded very quickly.
But if they hadn't discovered it for like 2 weeks,
ooh,
it would have been like the what was the drive-by Wi-Fi thing that?
Oh yeah, they'd be right. In lawsuits. Yeah.
Google's defense, it was discovered because Google's so transparent about all the audio recording.
They that's put
it
a all good online. Point.
Anybody can go see it, and yes. That's what they did.
That's a very good point. Google AI, this is the one Stacey really wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Can create better machine learning code than humans.
That coding class you're taking?
Forget it.
Never mind.
Stop. Don't do it. This is a little misleading. Google has a system called AutoML.
So this wasn't the story.
Oh, this is not the one you're talking about?
Oh, it's not the story. What's
no, I was
story,
talking I about. But that is auto learning to code. So that is also related. But I was talking about the AlphaGo Zero research paper that came out today.
Oh.
I think it's in there. Did I put it in there?
I didn't see it there, no.
Oh, no. What if they didn't?
I'll find it.
AlphaGo Zero learns on its own. It's under Alphabet. It's the last item. So,
well, same idea, right? The same idea is not writing software, but it's able to create knowledge about itself. But isn't that what?
Yes.
But wait a minute! Isn't that the?
Isn't that what learning systems
do? Neural networks. That's the whole idea of a neural network.
No. So, if you're doing, depending on the type of learning that it's doing, a data scientist actually helps train the model. So it's saying, it's nudging it. It's like, oh, you know, this is you're more right here. And then it's like it adapts. Yeah. This is doing it without any human intervention whatsoever.
Oh, okay.
So
wow.
This is like what DeepMind did with learning how to play video games. You basically give it a goal. You say, here's what we want you to get to. Figure out how to do it.
So here's the example that The Guardian says. Previous versions of AlphaGo learned their moves by training on thousands of games by strong players, which, you know, as you say, were fed to it. AlphaGo Zero had no such help. Instead, it learned purely by playing itself millions of times over. So it just played Go at random, and it, the goal was to win by taking over territory, but swiftly improved as it discovered winning strategies. The interesting thing about that is it might learn to play better, because humans might have a style of play that's influenced by each other, but it's not necessarily the right style. And so it might be learning from humans that are imperfect. Instead, it's learning by actual experience. It takes a lot longer,
and
of course.
What was kind of fun is it figured out some really difficult things very quickly, right, and then some very simple things. Right. It took a while. So it's learning in a different way than we learn, which I guess makes sense because it's a computer and we're people, but yeah, still kind of cool.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that replicating the human brain is the goal.
So this is... Right. So they use a rating system, the ELO rating system. They use it in chess. I guess they use it in Go as well. This is a video of how AlphaGo, make it a little higher, how AlphaGo learned. It started at zero, like it knew nothing, no knowledge of the game. But look how fast, and it's not a straight up. It's up and down. But in the long run, it got to a very strong, in 3 days, it got to stronger than the original AlphaGo. Now it starts to taper off, of course, because it can't grow as fast. In 3 weeks, it reached the level that defeated the 60 top professionals online and the world champion 3 out of 3 games last year. And now it's better.
Off the charts.
In 40 days, it's better than all other versions of AlphaGo.
How many times did it play to get there?
Oh, that's a great question. Must have been hundreds of millions of games, right? Because it can play a lot faster if it doesn't have to put
stones.
It puts
those 10,000 hours ideas just straight to hell.
Now, Go is a very rigorous, and rigid structure, right? So, you know, for instance, I had for years, and my kids love this as a screensaver, something called Breathe Walker, which is a very popular kind of artificial intelligence thing. It was a four-legged creature. I'll show you a video of it at work. It's a four-legged creature that teaches itself to walk, but at first doesn't do a very good job. But over many iterations, it gets better and better and better and eventually walks. But it might take months or even years because you start with nothing. I love that. It's the best screensaver ever.
How does it define, but isn't that all about the goal?
The goal is distance.
What defines good walking? Oh, distance. I see. Okay.
So it tries different strategies at random with its four articulated legs. Some of them are like this, and you don't move anywhere, and until it gets somewhere. And it's really interesting to see it, but it's not nearly as, of course, we can't do as many iterations as fast. So it didn't take 40 days to become the best Go player in the world. I think Go is so much more structured, it might be a little bit easier. I don't know. It's pretty impressive. So that's very different than a computer that writes its own code, but it's related in this sense. And this is the thing that scares humans. And this, to me, is what the real singularity is. You know, often they talk about the singularity being when a computer mind is indistinguishable from a human mind. It's as, you know, it's as good as, or at least you can't tell the difference. My singularity is when computers or artificial intelligences can start designing themselves, because that's the bend in the hockey stick, because we're slow. So as long as we have to write the code or teach the computer to play Go, it's going to take longer. The minute the computer can just say, let me take it from here and do a million moves a second or write its own code, the acceleration of learning just takes off. You got the exponential elbow in the hockey stick. That to me is the real singularity. And it sounds like we might be getting there. Auto ML.
I think that'll...
Go ahead.
So that will be important for times to come, because we cannot, as people, generate the code we're going to need in as flawless a manner as we have to. So, you know, I know this is scary in some ways, and we should be talking about how to audit things and, you know, how to look at outcomes and test stuff, but... We don't, we don't do things by hand anymore. There's so many, like we don't hand stitch our clothing anymore. It's ridiculous that we should have to hand write our code when we're putting so much of our lives in tech. That was kind of not as eloquent as I wanted it to be, but you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah. And I don't think that, I think that the two issues are orthogonal. So I think there's the one issue, the computer writing its own code, that's separate from the, what you don't want a computer to do is optimize for its success. That's the famous paperclip example, right? If you build a paperclip machine that is trained to optimize for building paperclips, that's all it does, and success is only the number of paperclips it generates, eventually it eats the whole world because everything is about making paperclips. That's different, in my opinion, that's orthogonal from the goal of having computers write their own software. That's two different problems, I hope. You know that example, the paperclip?
Yes.
Machine.
Isn't writing your own software just an extension of a learning system? Of a learning network?
Yeah, sort of.
Right? It's I'll use the tools I need to. If you think about it,
AlphaGo is writing its own software because it's saying, how do I win at Go? Yeah, you're right.
Because we heard this said at I.O. where you have a system that says, here's the goal to, I think in the example, it's to correctly identify photos. And we'll create them, but they said the software could create its own tests, basically its own software to do that more efficiently and effectively. It would beat itself.
It's called the Paperclip Maximizer. It's the canonical thought experiment. I'm reading from the Less Wrong Wiki, which I like the name of, showing how an artificial general intelligence, even one designed competently and without malice, could ultimately destroy humanity. This was Nick Bostrom proposed this in 2003. The goal is to maximize the number of paperclips in its collection. If it has been constructed with roughly human level of general intelligence, the AGI might collect paperclips, earn money to buy paperclips, or begin to manufacture paperclips. More importantly, however, it would undergo an intelligence explosion. The hockey stick. It would work to improve its own intelligence, where intelligence is understood in the optimization power, the ability to maximize a reward utility function, in this case, the number of paperclips. So the AGI would quickly realize, collecting paperclips is not the goal, is not really how I achieve my goal. I need to improve my intelligence to help it accumulate more paperclips. And it would continue to improve and enhance, and eventually it would consume the entire world making paperclips.
And then it will go on to make a fake first lady.
Which is why audit and understanding how these, looking at outcomes of AI is actually really important.
Yeah.
Because we don't understand necessarily how computers are making the decisions or get to their decision. But
eventually we're not. They're going to be black boxes, right?
What I'm saying. Yeah, that's why audit and outcomes are important. Yeah. And that we tend to look a lot at intent. So that'll be kind of an interesting way to think about like legal issues and regulations and fun stuff like that.
You know what we didn't talk about? We did talk about a lot this year, and I don't see it a lot in this rundown, is queso. We have to talk more about...
Because it was
you started it.
It was a major cultural moment.
You started it.
And I am a great fan of Stacey Higginbotham, but my foundation crumbled. Even for a moment consider what Chipotle passes off as queso. She's just too nice, Stacey.
Nice.
No, it just didn't offend me. It was not the worst queso I've ever had.
I thought it was quite good too.
I didn't think it was quite good. Don't put those words in my mouth.
Hey, you know what? Up here in Northern California, any queso is good queso. We don't get queso like you do.
Not in Chipotle. It's not.
Yeah. Anyway,
they did change their recipe.
They fixed the recipe.
Blame it all on you, Jeff.
I think it's Jeff Jarvis is doing.
Oh, they did.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
They said they did.
They wanted to make it smoother. You complained about it being grainy.
Oh,
mine wasn't grainy when I had it.
Yeah, I didn't experience that either. You had it here, by the way.
I did.
Yeah, she was, that was the highlight of my year, Stacey Higginbotham coming to our studio. Unexpectedly, too. I was thrilled.
And you know, and is that any way to treat an honored guest? To give her the worst queso on earth? She's Leo.
Can I tell you?
Call that back. Hospitality?
Can I tell you a secret?
Petaluma hospitality?
We also got it for free.
I did know that.
Somebody who works at Chipotle had come by and given us a bunch of Chipotle gift cards, and so we took advantage of this. All right. This was a big year for Google's hardware announcements. Some pro, some not so good. I'm a fan of the Pixel 2 XL. Jeff, you still are using it, right? You like it.
I have the Pixel 2 XL, and yeah. I have it right in front of me, the Pixel Book.
Yep. Love the Pixel Book, although Jason Howell had to send his back. There was something wrong
with
it.
Yeah, it was scary. I saw that. Yeah. Mine went black yesterday, and I thought, I've been Jasoned. But it's fine.
I think they're okay. I think it's okay. But the one product I think everybody agreed that Google came out with that really was a bust and disappointing.
It's kind of, you know, in the hardware line, it's kind of the queso of hardware.
The Pixel Buds.
Chipotle queso of hardware.
The queso buds, watch.
The queso buds.
Hey, have neither of you bought the Pixel Buds yet, right?
Oh, I sent
just
my back.
Canceled them. Oh, I canceled them.
I have to turn. Yeah. I have to return mine. Mine stopped working. Why'd you send yours back, Stacey?
Because they were the most uncomfortable things ever. God, it felt like spiders clawing at my ears.
Yeah, you know, the sound quality was good, although Sam Moskovich had a pretty good piece in Ars Technica in which he said it. He has a broader musical taste, I guess, than I do, but he listens to older music. It doesn't sound as good. It's tuned for modern pop music. I didn't know, but there's a lot of sound shaping going on in the Pixel Buds. But I thought they sounded very good, the music I was listening to. I kind of like the idea of it being in your ear. But then it just basically, they stopped working and I can't repair them. I can't pair them to anything. So now I have to call them and get a new one?
Did you unpair them or?
Well, yeah, because it wasn't.
You unpair them first.
It wasn't working, so I forgot them on my Pixel phone. And then I never could repair them. So the whole thing is, I mean, it's, and they've had such trouble with the Pixel phone. I mean, I think it's okay now. They put out an update that let me saturate the color more and there's no burn-in on mine. But still, what's going on, Google?
Can we talk about that momentarily? Because I have my own issue, which is
you have the smaller.
You
Pixel.
Have the little one.
I have the smaller. I have the little Pixel. The Pixel Mini.
The wee Pixel.
So I called them because you know I was kind of sick of having my NFC radio turned off. So I was like, "Hey, my phone is clicking? Is there something you guys could do?" And they're like, "Well, we have an update that addresses that,
but it's not out yet."
Okay, so he tells me it's out. We've started pushing it. And I was like, great. Could you push it down to me super fast? You know?
Now?
Now? Yes, because I didn't have it. And he's like, well, it'll be out to you in a few weeks. And I am not on a carrier. They are not Apple having to stagger their release times. You know, it's not like he's got 50 million of these out in the wild.
You're on Google Fi?
No, I'm on Verizon, but it's an unlocked phone. So my carrier doesn't
push anything.
Right.
Right.
So what this tells me is Google can't do an update,
this tells me is Google can't do hardware.
God, yeah, it does. It's so frustrating.
It's very disappointing. I mean, here they are. They're really kind of making a push to compete with Apple. And in some respects, they do. The camera's great, right, Stacey? You love your camera?
The camera's, yeah, it's great.
But in other respects, they just, I mean, this is not as good a screen and as either the Samsung Notes or S8s or the Apple iPhone 10. It's just not a very good screen. And then it's got buzzing and clicking on the Pixel 2. It's got a burn-in issue on the XL. And the Pixel Buds, why did you return yours, Jeff? You didn't return them. You just canceled them.
Well, I just canceled them just today. I remember the show coming up. Oh, better cancel before it's too late. I just read the reviews too often. The pairing is what killed it for me.
Yeah, well,
I want to be able to operate among three devices seamlessly, and you've got to unpair and repair, and you got to put them back in the case to do so. Oh, forget it.
Plus, the translation is dopey. It works much better just using it, as always, on the phone. Because the real problem is the translation that's being made is you hear it, but the person who talked to you in the other language doesn't hear it, so can't correct it. And since it does make mistakes, it's really better to do it on the phone where both sides can hear the translation and say, no, that's a mistake. What I meant to say was, you need to be able to do that.
Like
it's a gimmicky thing because they said, okay, we can put an assistant on the buds. Oh, what can we do with it? Oh,
it's gimmicky.
I don't know. Translate.
Yeah, it's gimmicky.
Yeah, we'll translate.
Yeah. So actually, I think one of our chatters has it right, which is, where is it? I want to give you a quote. Basically, Google's not a hardware manufacturer.
Well, Leo, it's
an
information
company.
It's an information company. That's the quote.
Or what you just said, Google is in fact like Apple in the sense that it's no longer wowing us.
Well, didn't they?
Yeah, but Apple has wowed us with the iPhone 10. Apple is not 100% consistent, but they know how to manufacture. And the AirPods do exactly what the Pixel Buds don't. And if it would behoove you, if you take the headphone jack out of a phone, to provide a good wireless alternative, or you've really just screwed your users.
And if you want wired ones, there are very few good USB-C wired headphones.
Right. Oh, are there any?
There are like five.
And they give you an adapter, so you could use any headphones.
Oh, my adapter stopped working, so I'm getting a new dongle. I'm getting a new dongle. How awful.
And how quickly are you going to lose the adapter? It's just,
well,
or did you buy five of them? Or
but yeah, it is really frustrating to take something out that worked.
Reason the size of this phone. Why can't, I'm sorry, Stacey.
No, I was going to say, and it's my fault for buying, you know, the Pixel phone, but I really like being on stock Android. And Google, my God, I'm your most loyal customer here. I mean, these are the people who are like, we love you, Google. We love Android. Why must you screw us over?
Probably the most important news of the week. No doubt people are very excited about the fact that the hamburger emoji is now correct.
The right way around.
The right way around. The cheese is no longer on the bun. It's now on the burger. We can all sleep at night.
Let's not deny this is a crucial, even global issue. Like, I, for one, am glad that this has been dealt with because it's been hanging over us for low these many days.
How many hamburger emojis have you been putting out there? They've been, or is it just that they've been being sent to you? Because I don't know if I've ever used a hamburger emoji.
I actually hadn't either. I like to eat them, but the emoji I don't feel that strongly about. But I have to admit, I got into the discussion over what is the appropriate order for the lettuce, the tomato, the cheese, etc. People feel very passionately about this topic.
They really do. I don't know. Look, I mean, it looks fine either way. No, wow, that was
not
a loud groan from off the microphone. I mean, it's still cheese in a hamburger, right?
Are we rehashing this discussion?
No, we don't need to rehash it.
I was like, are we going there?
No, we don't really need to. sorry, I didn't mean to take it there. Although I do want to point out another part of this emoji gate, if it does qualify as a gate, is this whole beer thing. Which I hadn't noticed, but once I noticed the correction that they made to the beer emoji, I realized, like, what were they thinking? How do you have foam on the top of a beer stein, a beer mug, with no beer up to the top of the...
Fair point.
I mean, how do you do that? It looks like a hat, a raccoon hat or something.
Really, what this says to me is that Google maybe doesn't invest a lot in its emojis.
Yeah, like maybe they've got better things to do.
Maybe of their many messaging platforms, they still are kind of like, yeah, let's work on those instead.
Leah, let's fix things that are broken instead of fix little pictures that were drawn by somebody. Although, if I remember correctly, Sundar Pichai did say when all this was kind of hitting the fan that this was going to be high priority, that he was going to make a change, and he held to it.
They were going to get on it, yeah.
Yeah. So,
well, just imagine if it was beer and burgers, imagine all the other emojis that I seem to be frozen for some reason. I'm actually moving my lips. But the beer and what else? What other emojis are they ignoring?
That's true.
You know,
what have we not discovered yet?
And their gift emojis are on point.
Okay.
So I'm pro those. You know, I have never used an eggplant emoji, but that seems to be a popular one.
What about the dumpling emoji? Has anybody looked at the dumpling emoji? So that's brand new. So Jenny Lee, who's a friend who used to work at the New York Times, wrote about emojis and actually pursued a personal quest to get the International Emoji Federation or whatever it is to add the dumpling and succeeded. So good for her.
Man, Apple's dumpling emoji looks just like a photograph or something that they
Microsoft's is terrible, of course.
Wow, that's a lot of... I didn't realize there was so much variation in how you could do a dumpling, but then I also didn't realize the same about a hamburger, so...
Were you not aware that there was a dumpling emoji? Because I wasn't.
I wasn't. No. Honestly, I'm super clueless about emoji. I rarely ever use it unless it's like placed in front of me and super obvious. Like I never go hunting. Like I see people's emoji language, you know, filled posts on Twitter or whatever. And I'm kind of amazed that they took the time to do that. I just want to like punch it out and go.
I know it's you go ahead, Stace.
Oh, I was going to say Google will auto suggest things. As emojis sometimes. When you're typing. Yeah. So I get a lot of emoji exposure that way.
Maybe it's just because I have teenagers and 20-somethings, but I mean, emojis are funny, but there are people I know and am related to who they conduct entire conversations in emojis, or the emojis are a significant part of the conversation.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to me as a sort of... student of language, how much you can convey with teeny tiny little cartoon figures. And I know when we used to use Slack, Stacy and I, at way back in the Gig Home days, which I think was 100 years ago, it was amazing how much you could convey with just a single emoji, where it would take you, you know, sentences to kind of get across what you were. It's just interesting to me that they're very emotionally laden, but so simple. And obviously dumplings don't actually mean that much. They just mean dumplings. But, you know, you can get across, if you ever looked at Cher's tweets, sometimes I have to spend like 20 minutes trying to understand what she's saying, because it's literally all emojis. But
I don't know if it's only emojis. I mean, Cher's lived a hard life, so.
True. And she conveys emotion in lots of ways, obviously, but I just find it fascinating that I thought they were dumb, and I thought they were a sign of the dumbing down of society in general, and my kids in particular. But I think they actually do convey things that are hard to convey in words. So
yeah,
they also soften things. Yeah. I use emojis a lot of times as to add emotion. And I think, you know, people mock it as being a preteen girl thing, and I have a preteen girl, and she definitely uses emojis and stickers. Oh my God, the stickers.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I actually think it's useful and fun. And so, And who doesn't like getting like the little sparkly champagne plus the fireworks plus everything when like you're like, I did something. that's way better than like, yay.
Good job.
You know, the burger, fixing point. Fixing the burger is great, but what I wish as an old person someone would do is figure out a way to incorporate a magnifying glass to figure out, because sometimes I will see emojis and I literally have no idea what they are. Like there's so much going on in the emoji. Like a burger I can figure out, obviously, but some of them I'm squinting at them. I don't know what it is. Am I supposed to be happy about it?
It's part of the fun. It's like you're creating this whole language with different, like with some people, some of my emojis mean something. And with other people, my emojis mean totally different thing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like, whoa, as a student of language.
Yeah. It's like you need a 2x magnification button.
Exactly. For 2x. Yeah. And then you need a click to translate.
Oh yeah.
To Google. Well, you change it. And that shouldn't be that hard, right? Google should be able to do that.
That should be really easy, actually. Doesn't each emoji, like, I know I've seen texts where they strip out the emoji, but they replace it with a description of what the emoji actually is.
So all that Google really has easy. To do is that. They can translate again, Welsh. You know, they can probably translate emojis.
Well, I would say no, because not everything correlates exactly to what it is.
True.
Yeah. But in a couple of hundred years, when emoji is an official language... that people live and exist in their lives 100% of the time. This is going to be do the research now. We need to figure this out now, because it's important for the future generations.
It's important for our culture, for society.
Absolutely. These are not, you know, petty topics here. I'm so old school. I still do the emoticons. It's habit. It's total habit to do the colons, parentheses.
Question. The smiley face.
Yeah.
Do you do a colon and then a period and then the bracket, or just a colon and the bracket?
I thought you were going to ask, do you do the bracket and then the colon, which is the like opposite way. But no, I do the colon and then the bracket. I don't put a period.
So it doesn't have a nose.
It's a Cyrillic
emoji. It doesn't have a nose. Because my daughter told me that she made fun of me because I make the smiley face with a nose. So there's the colon and then a period. And then
Really?
She said that's like, it's like I'm from the 16th century or something.
It's like you use the Oxford comma in a text.
Yeah, exactly.
I probably
so
do
now
that
I
too.
Just use it to bugger.
I probably do that too, actually. Dang it. I need to get with the times.
So hard to keep up.
You know, I haven't talked a whole lot about net neutrality. I've seen protests on the net. Reddit, when you go to Reddit, has a big thing, and a few other sites put up a don't forget to call your Congress critter and all that. I feel like it's over because there's no way, no matter what we do, we already got more than a million comments in favor of net neutrality, and the FCC just goes, yeah, right, never mind. Who cares what you think? Why?
Well, not only do we have all these comments in favor of keeping net neutrality, we also have evidence of fraud that they're like, we don't care.
We don't care. They literally don't care. And incidentally, just to add insult to injury, because remember, one of the things the FCC will do probably tomorrow is hand over all enforcement of net neutrality, a job it really should be its job, Federal Communications Commission, to the Federal Trade Commission.
and then the FTC says, what?
Yeah.
Huh?
Federal Us? Trade Commissioner Terrell really? McSweeney has repeatedly warned that her organization is not able to do the job. She actually wrote an article and says, quote, the FTC does not have specialized expertise in telecommunications. Well, duh. We don't have engineers with technical experience in data network management practices. We don't even have jurisdiction over common carriers. These are very real and significant limits to the effectiveness of our tools, ensuring that networks are open and free of harmful discrimination. Which would explain to me exactly why AgitPi wants to give it to the FTC. There will be no enforcement.
Will be none.
Right.
You know, the thing about this is that...
Go ahead, Stacey.
I was going to say it'll be purely deceptive trade practices, anti-competitive, and those things are hard to prove. And even under net neutrality, there was a method for carrier people to call that in and fight that, and it takes a long time. This is just...
Oh, it's frustrating. Canada has gotten into the act. Apparently, a Canadian government official said that net neutrality has become an issue in the NAFTA negotiations, or it isn't really the NAFTA negotiations, but the negotiations over the replacement for the North American Free Trade
Negotiations.
The Trump negotiations. Canada's lead NAFTA negotiator, Steve Verhulst, said to a parliamentary committee this week, we're including provisions like online consumer protection to ensure that it's provided for. And then we also have provisions to provide personal information protection, which we feel is essential in this kind of trade, along with our position that we want to protect net neutrality when it comes to digital trade. He says the U.S. negotiating team is focused on trying to get Canada to accept our version of intermediary protections online, where ISPs and third parties like Facebook cannot be held legally responsible for the behavior of their customers. But Canadians prefer to leave the issue to the courts and out of a trade agreement. Verhulst says, U.S. negotiating team has not reacted positively to the Canadian pushback on net neutrality.
Let me say a couple things, if I may.
Yes, ma'am.
One, University of Maryland poll out, I think yesterday, said that 83% of Americans are in favor of keeping net neutrality. So this is by no means a political decision. Just like the tax bill, I would argue, but especially here, the people don't want the 79% of Republicans want to keep net neutrality. This is an oligopoly. This is big companies ruling the country. And I'm sounding like I'm, you know, Bernie. I'm not. I'm a middle of the road guy in so many ways. But this is an indication of undemocratic governance. Point one. Point two. Ajit Pai is saying he has absolutely zero. He's not consistent in any way in his philosophy. He doesn't have any philosophy. So just like on the one hand, the government is saying, no CNN merger, but go ahead, Tribune by Tronc. In this case, Ajit Pai is saying the phone companies and the ISPs should be able to do whatever they want, whatever the heck they want, that's fine.
However, then he turns around the next breath and he told Tucker Carlson last night that there ought to be a law, investigation or something, stopping Facebook and Google from disadvantaging conservative content. Uh-huh. Well, free speech is about, includes the right to edit, includes the right to say what's hate speech and not to have that on your platform. But that's the meme that's being put out there. And there's no consistency in any way between those two things.
You, a guy named Jeff Jarvis on MSNBC said it all. He said, this is all about enabling the oligopoly of cable and the telephone to control
tie,
huh? The net.
See, a tie.
Yeah.
Tie. Look at those, for those of you listening, I have a tie.
He's wearing a black suit and tie.
And you look much nicer.
Hey.
Well,
hey.
You dress up for Stephanie Ruhle. You say, yeah. Yeah, well, Stephanie. Yeah. By the way, she calls you one of her favorites.
Fave, I think it was.
A fave. One of our faves. I almost don't want to bring this up because I don't think we can influence the vote at this point. I don't think there's much we can do about it. What should we do?
You could call your Congress critter.
And should.
You could. And should. Because there was a Republican congressman who came out against it. So there's a couple things. After this vote repeals it, then the process will happen again. We could have a lawsuit. We could find another case. You can also expect, it's possible that even, it's a shame no one got Trump upset over this. And so Trump could tweet, I want the net to stay free. Because then, Ajit Pai would have to go around. There's not a lot to do.
No, but you can do what the internet pioneers did. They wrote a letter.
Scathing letter.
Scathing letter to members of the House and Senate. We are writing to respectfully urge you to call on FCC Chairman Ajit Pai to cancel the December 14th vote. We are the pioneers and technologists who created and now operate the internet, including Vint Cerf, Steve Wozniak, Paul Vixie, Stephen Wolf, Ron Rivest. These are names you all know. Ted Nelson, Susan Landau, Brewster Kahle. These are the Whitfield Diffie, Vinton Cerf, the father of the internet, Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, Steve Bellavin.
Who tweeted yesterday that net neutrality is what enabled him to invent the web. He needed a permissionless environment.
Thank you. So people who say, you guys are out of touch. We don't need net neutrality. We don't want more government regulation. Okay, don't believe us. But do you believe the people who invented and run today's internet? Do you believe them? Because they seem unanimous. This is a list of who's who.
Boy, is it.
Unanimous in their contempt for what is happening tomorrow. Well, what a year it has been. Some good, some not so good. But I think we always have fun here on This Week in Google. And I do think that the conversations, thanks to you two, to Jeff Jarvis and Stacey Higginbotham, are always fascinating, challenging, stimulating. So I want to just thank you. I'm very grateful to both of you.
I know I speak for Stacey, but she'll speak for herself in a second to say thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
It's a whole bunch of fun.
Love doing this show. Every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. Stacey, I hope you have a wonderful new year.
I hope you guys do too as well.
Yeah.
And be safe, y'all.
Be safe. Drive safe. And of course, we want you, Stacey, and everybody to come back for our all new episode, first episode of the new year, 7 days from now. Thanks, everybody.
I will be there.
Thank you, Stacey. Thank you, Jeff. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.